You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Hotel workers in three of the country's largest cities are prepared to go on strike. Housekeepers, bellmen, and other workers in Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco are planning the strike in an attempt to pressure employers into signing contracts that would enhance the voice of unions in nine major hotels. In addition to typical strike demands over wages and benefits, the demand of some of those workers is a contract that would expire at the same time as those for hotel workers in other cities, essentially giving the hotel unions more negotiation leverage across the country.
Several large bankruptcies have swung a $19 billion surplus into an $11.2 billion deficit for the U.S. government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, and a new report by the Center of Federal Financial Institutions estimates the PBGC will be broke by 2020. In principle, corporations are required to contribute enough money to the PBGC to cover all future pension payments. Douglas Elliott is president and author of the Coffee Report.
Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation was set up like the FDIC to guarantee bank deposits. The PBGC guarantees that if you are promised a pension, that company goes bankrupt, and there's not enough money in the pension fund, you'll still get the pension.
But employers are getting around their obligations by abusing flexibility on the timing of their contributions.
It was kind of masked in the 90s when everybody was seeming to do much better than they really were, and stock prices were high, which helped pension funds that invested in stocks, and it also made it less likely that companies would go bankrupt.
Elliott says that to date, American corporations have promised their employees more than $1.5 trillion worth of pension payments.
After shutting down five factories throughout Michigan and Ohio for 5 weeks, Michigan sugar workers were back on the job Monday. The workers at a Ohio factory staged the walkout out of displeasure of having a contract imposed on them by the company. The workers set up picket lines at all of the company's factories, including four in Michigan. And when workers at the other factories refused to cross, Michigan Sugar was forced to go to the National Labor Relations Board, claiming that it was illegal for the Ohio workers to strike at Michigan factories. The NLRB disagreed, and the company finally sat down with negotiators late last week. After reaching a compromise, work at the factories returned to normal on Monday.
Here's today's DalBob Report. The federal budget is graying, according to a new report by the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Researchers found social welfare spending for elders was nearly four times greater than that for children in the year 2000, an increase of 20%. Higher medical expenses for the elderly were cited as one of the main reasons for the discrepancy, despite higher rates of poverty for children. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Colin Powell did it with AOL Time Warner. John Ashcroft did it with Microsoft and Monsanto. Interior Secretary Gail Norton did it with BP Amoco. Condoleezza Rice did it with Chevron. Ooh, Donald Rumsfeld did it with big boys Sears, Kellogg, and Allstate.
Of course the Bush administration is in bed with its corporate donors.
George Bush did it with Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and Enron.
Did you think they were giving it away?
Paid for by BillionaireForBush.com.
I can't begin to tell you how proud I am of the assaults that Bush, Cheney, and gang are making on America's decorated veterans. Of course, they're all over John Kerry, who's running to depose this regime of chicken hawks. Using a former Nixon hatchet man as their tool, they're assailing Kerry for his three Purple Hearts and two other Medals of Valor. The Bushites want you to believe that such honors are doled out like prizes and boxes of Cracker Jacks, which is as close as they got to any war medals. But how about Max Cleland? The former U.S. Senator from Georgia doesn't need medals to show his bravery and sacrifice. He came home from Vietnam minus two legs and an arm. Yet this is not enough for the Chicken Hawks, who have actually tried to suggest that he didn't deserve his Bathed in the Blood medals. Indeed, when Cleland pulled his wheelchair up to the front gate of Bush's ranchette outside of Crawford, Texas, where the president was vacationing in August, George dispatched his aides to tell Cleland that the prez was too busy vacationing even to accept the letter that he had come to deliver. It was a letter calling on the Bushites to stop their dishonorable political attacks on decorated vets. "Where is the shame?" asked Cleland, sitting in the hot August sun in his wheelchair after George W. stiffed him. Shame? Bush is immune to shame. He used family connections to avoid going to Vietnam in his day, where he might possibly have encountered the kind of injuries that Cleland suffered, though Bush proclaimed that he supported that war with all of his heart. So did Vice President Dick Cheney, who's also now assailing Kerry's war record. Dick, who grabbed 5 draft deferments to keep him from having to face the reality of war, smugly says, "I had other priorities in the 60s than military service." This is Jim Hightower saying, those who had other priorities while cheering the war from afar ought not now be sliming those who put their lives at risk.
This is a financial up. Average mortgage rates took a slight dip this week.
Sorry to interrupt, but LendingTree.com is the only place where banks compete over your mortgage. Then you get up to 4 real offers to choose from within minutes. So do better and choose from low rates. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and licensing.
Hello from the road, folks. You know, the only thing better than a twofer is a threefer. That's why this fall I'm staying at Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels. See, I get triple Southwest Airlines Rapid Rewards credit every time. So I earn flights 3 times faster. Call 800-4-CHOICE or visit choicehotels.com. We'll see you there.
Offer good for qualifying stays in the U.S. before November 30th, 2004. For details, visit choicehotels.com. Triple credit means 1.5 credits instead of a standard 0.5.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, it's starting to get kind of rough out there. Not just speaking of Hurricane Ivan, of course, a big problem. Welcome to the wonderful world of global warming down south. But also a big problem for the Bush administration, Kitty Kelly. Talking about perfect storms. Kitty Kelly coming out and with her family, her book on the Bush, as my colleague Mike Malloy used to refer to, still does, I'm sure, refer to it as the Bush crime family. Kitty Kelly going back 4 generations and demonstrating that indeed it may well be just, you know, very similar to the mafia. And, well, we'll get into a little bit of that in just a few minutes. Our quote for the day from Aristotle: where there is no middle class and the poor greatly exceed in numbers, troubles arise and the state soon comes to an end. Interesting thoughts. I mean, it's been known for some time. It's funny how the cons love to quote this 18th century British or Scottish economist in saying that democracy never survives because the people, when they figure out they can do it, will simply vote themselves all kinds of wealth, you know, from the public purse, and the republic will be destroyed. And of course, it's a phony statement. I mean, at the time the guy said it, there had only been one democracy, and that was Athens, Greece, and it didn't fall because people voted themselves in the public purse. It fell for a variety of reasons, not the least of which had to do with, in my opinion, and that of I.F. Stone, who wrote The Trial of Socrates, a little bit of subterfuge on the part of Socrates and a few of his students. And Alexander the Great played a little bit of a role in there, rolling in and taking over. But in any case, the middle class is important. Welcome to our program. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast. An extraordinary day. It's the Ides of September, the 15th of September, 48 days to regime change or not. We'll discuss that, too. What would happen if George W. Bush got elected? Might there be an upside to it? Yeah. I'll just leave that with you for a few minutes. We'll get back around to it. 1,108 days since 9/11, 759 days since the anthrax attacks led to the passage of the Patriot Act. Do we know who committed terrorism on the soil of America? No. Are we hearing anything from the Bush administration? Let's find this guy. You know, he could kill again. No, you're not hearing that. I'm not hearing that. Maybe you are. But I don't think any of us are hearing it. Frankly, it's just, you know, like the number of times Osama bin Laden's name has come out of George Bush's mouth in the last year. It's been, what, 8 or 9? And every single time it was in response to a reporter's question where he had basically no choice. Anyhow, my brother-in-law forwarded me an email. You know, it's one of these kind of round robin things going all over the web. And it's a sweet sentiment. And I want to thank Art for this. It's a sweet sentiment. And there are less than 3 months until the election. He didn't write it. He just forwarded it from somebody else. There are less than three. I wouldn't want to blame him for it. There are less than 3 months until the election, and an election that will decide the next president of the United States, says this email. The man elected will be the president of all Americans, not just Democrats or Republicans, all Americans. To show our solidarity as Americans, let's all get together and show each other our support for the candidate of our choice. It's time that we all came together, Democrats and Republicans alike. So, if you support the policies and character of John Kerry, please drive with your headlights on during the day. Well, that's a nice idea. And if you support President George W. Bush, please drive with your headlights off at night. Well, I suppose there might be a few people who would take it seriously. I should probably throw a caveat on there. Do not, you know, please do not do this. And I don't need to. Anyhow, sex, drugs, cowardice, and cruelty. That's quite a lineup for a son of extreme privilege. Sex, drugs, cowardice, and cruelty. First of all, George W. Bush's military record is coming under considerable scrutiny. By the way, that lineup comes from, interestingly, an article in the Sunday Herald, which is the largest newspaper in Australia, at least the largest Sunday paper, published out of Sydney. And the international press is heavily reporting on Kitty Kelly's book. And it's getting a light touch here in the United States. Chris Matthews last night trying, I suppose, to demonstrate that maybe it's just all gossip. Aaron Brown, a little later on in the evening, everybody's scared to death, frankly, of being chewed by the Bush machine. And Kitty Kelly pointed this out. She said that she talked to so many people. I mean, she said sometimes 3, 4, 5, 6 sources for a story. Multiple sources for stories about Laura Bush being a pot dealer and being the go-go girl for dime bags of pot when she was in college, and George W. being abusive and, beating his wife. I mean, that his parents for an entire year refused to speak to him because of his abusive behavior towards his own wife. Now, I'm not sure if this is in Kitty Kelly's book or not, but everything in her book raises this question in my mind. I remember the day that, which was a rather bad day. This is before 9/11, and things were not going politically particularly well for George W. And there was a big football game on, and which, of course, would be a great anchor for him for drinking. And he passed out in the White House recreation room in front of the big screen TV and fell flat on the floor and hit his face. And there was that picture that showed, of his cheek just below his eye being split open from impact with the floor. And a friend of mine who runs a drug rehab center, used to run a drug rehab center, who I knew from years ago in social work days, called me up and said, that wound on his face is just so typical of what I see with our alcoholics who have fallen off the wagon and drink until blackout, drink until they pass out, and then hit a hard floor. Because that's if you just pass out, this particular type of pass out, apparently, given the way the head is structured relative to the neck and the rest of the body and the weight of the head, I mean, it's like a bowling ball on top of this little tottery thing called your neck, that's how you hit the floor. And he said, pretzels, come on. Have you ever heard in your entire life of a reformed alcoholic who passed out from pretzels? He said, I've heard of a dozen or so that have claimed that. Not a single one actually did. And, that was kind of whispered back then. But now Kitty Kelly's book is, if there's any truth to this thing at all, and she claims that there is she's got sources and double sources and tape recordings and witnesses and blah, 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 to a whole bunch of things. Starting out, of course, the Champagne Squadron, the unit that Bush was assigned to, as the Sunday Herald notes, the unit Bush was assigned to was known as the Champagne Squadron because of the numbers of sons of American millionaires who served in it. The unit included the sons of former Texas Governor John Connally, former Senator Lloyd Benson, as well as several members of the Dallas Cowboys American football team. It turns out that you couldn't get into this thing very easily. There was always a long waiting list, and George's draft number was coming up. And this I find fascinating. The 60 Minutes story last week, Tuesday, I think 60 Minutes is on? Wednesday, whenever it was, last week. Dan Rather's story. The core of the story was an interview with the former Speaker of the House for the state of Texas, Roy Barnes, in which Barnes, for the first time in 30 years, came forward and publicly said that he was the guy who pulled the strings at the request of a friend of George Bush Sr. to get Shrub into the Texas Air National Guard so that he wouldn't end up in Vietnam. Because back then, the National Guard, I mean, there were a few guardsmen who ended up in Vietnam, but I mean, we're talking, you know, a handful. It was rare. And it didn't at all happen out of Texas. It just didn't happen. And so anyhow, that was the key story. And now you've got the cons running around going, oh, no, the documents. And there were a few documents that backed it up by a guy who's dead. Oh, the documents are forged. What about the live guy? Oh, we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about forgeries. But what about the live guy who said he pulled the strings to get Bush in? And then Bush didn't fulfill his service. And as soon as the Air Force or the National Guard, Texas Air National Guard, started instituting in 1972 random drug tests during their flight physicals, suddenly Bush stopped showing up for his flight physicals. What about that? Oh, well, you know, we think the documents are forged. But he didn't show up for his flight physical. Well, we're not going to talk about that. You get what's going on here? You know, I think There's a conspiracy theory out there that I think actually has some serious credibility because it's so grounded in fact. Karl Rove, turns out, was the source of A.J. Hatfield's assertion that Bush had been busted for cocaine. Now, why would Karl Rove rat out his own governor for his own candidate for governor? Hatfield wrote this book, Fortunate Son, and in it he talks about, you know, Bush's cocaine arrest in the 70s, and his having to do 30 days of community service in order to, you know, get the charges dropped, and getting an expunged from his record when he became governor, got a new driver's license issued, all of the former, every single former record of his statewide got erased. The number, his old driver's license number, no longer even exists. And Rove had actually leaked that story. And then another time, Bush is way behind. And the reason he did was because Hatfield himself, who was writing this book, had served time in jail. And so Hatfield releases the story. And then Rove goes in and says, well, this guy has no credibility. He used to be a felon. And boom, from that day forward, nobody in the press would touch the Bush and cocaine story because the messenger had been assassinated. And Rove had set up the assassination. He had set it up. And the same thing when Bush was running. And then another time, Bush is way behind. And the reason he did was because Hatfield himself, who was writing this book, had served time in jail. And so Hatfield releases the story. And then Rove goes in and says, well, this guy has no credibility. He used to be a felon. And boom, from that day forward, nobody in the press would touch the Bush and cocaine story because the messenger had been assassinated. And Rove had set up the assassination. He had set it up. And the same thing when Bush was running, he was falling behind in the polls in the race for governor, in another race for governor in Texas. Actually, the first time might have been his failed congressional run. In any case, he was running for governor, and all of a sudden, Karl Rove's office is bugged, right? And the state police come in, and it's like major headlines, big news story, and everybody's all focusing, who tried, you know, who could? And it completely shifted the focus away from the failures of Bush and the charges against him by Ann Richards and helped him win the seat. And it turned out that when the state plays the art, Tom Hartman here with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. We've all heard the phrase, use it or lose it. Well, according to a study just published in the journal Neurology, people with mentally challenging work seem to be less likely to develop Alzheimer's disease than those working in physically demanding jobs. Researchers suggest lifelong stimulus maintains a reserve of brain cells and strengthens connections between neurons.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went off with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Someone should have told me, someone should have warned, so I wouldn't have been blinded by the power of that storm. The blue
and welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Laura Bush, according to Robert Nash, a PR executive, she not only smoked dope, but she sold dope at Southern Methodist University. The go-to girl for dime bags of grass, he says, quoted by Kelly Kelly. Laura was also involved, as the Sunday Herald notes, in a car crash that killed her, a friend of hers. I had read earlier it was her boyfriend. I don't know. When she was 17, the 17-year-old Michael Douglas, no charges were ever filed. Laura is also supposed to have had to flee her marital home on a number of occasions because of a Bush's apparently abusive behavior. Reading here from the Sunday Herald story, police were never said to have been involved. A friend of Bush, Tobey McDonald, says, poor Georgie, he couldn't relate to women unless he was loaded. Another friend added, he went out of his way to act crude. It's quite amazing that someone you held in such low esteem became president. A third friend says, Bush wasn't interested in anything except booze and sports. In 1976, says the Sunday Herald, Bush was found drunk driving down his parent street in Washington, D.C. When his father challenged him, Bush apparently offered to fight his dad, saying, you want to go mano a mano right here? And on it goes. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Brad in Phoenix is on the line. Hey, Brad, what's up?
This is Brad. I don't really think it's that unusual. It's just like a classic example of someone in recovery or that came out of recovery that moved on with their life. I mean,
well, you know, I'd have no problem with these things, Brad. In fact, I would salute him if number one he would own up to them, and if number two,
part of recovery. That's part of what Anonymous is all about.
But see, he's never done that. He hasn't done this.
He's not supposed to do that. That's what recovery is all about. You don't out yourself for self-aggrandizement reasons. You don't do that. That's a self-seeking motive. You don't ever do that. You take care of your problem internally, and that's it. You don't ask for adulation and pats on the back for doing that.
Well, of course
that's
not.
Totally opposite to a good recovery process.
But you also don't deny what you've done.
You don't. To the people that are closest to you.
You don't deny what you've done.
You don't do it on a public stage.
If you're running for president of the United States, I think you better. This is the guy who's got his finger on the nuclear trigger, and we should be sitting around worrying about whether he's going to fall off the wagon. You don't think that we have a right to know?
The point is that there's an awful lot of people out there that are in recovery, that have been through recovery, that in that understand this process and move on with their lives, and that for a guy to move along, I mean, I didn't care if it's John Kerry, if he had the same issue, that's fine. That happens. That's reality in society these days. People do recover, and they move on to their lives, and they are not held back from doing certain jobs. They move on. There's doctors. There's all kinds of people that are in
positions. And those people do not spend the rest of their lives lying about their past, saying, oh, no, I served honorably, when actually they ducked out of their flight physical because they were afraid of the drug test.
That's what you say.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what Kitty Kelly says. Yeah.
Well, she's such a great authority. I mean, she's so well respected.
Well, none of all of her other biographies have stood up to the scrutiny of massive legal assaults. She has never been brought down.
They sell well. Selling well doesn't mean they're right.
Selling, when you're going against Frank Sinatra, you're going against the royal family. You better have good facts or good lawyers, and she's got good facts. It appears.
There's nobody in serious journalism that gives her an ounce of credibility, and you got to know that. I mean, come on.
She's not the only one saying this. I mean, Karl Rove was, in the information to Hatfield about Bush's cocaine arrest, and Bush is denying this.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, actually, Bush is not denying. He said if the FBI form, this was when he first ran for president, he said the FBI form requires you to say whether you've used drugs in the last 7 years. The answer to that question is no, I haven't in the last 7 years. Yeah, that's not the right answer. It's not real. Anyhow, Brad, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, 29 minutes past the hour. George W. and Carla Faye Tucker next. 120 executions in Texas. What's that about? 29 minutes past the hour. Stick around. We'll be right back.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop
and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Hotel workers in three of the country's largest cities are prepared to go on strike. Housekeepers, bellmen, and other workers in Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco are planning the strike in an attempt to pressure employers into signing contracts that would enhance the voice of unions in nine major hotels. In addition to typical strike demands over wages and benefits, the demand of some of those workers is a contract that would expire at the same time as those for hotel workers in other cities, essentially giving the hotel unions more negotiation leverage across the country.
Several large bankruptcies have swung a $19 billion surplus into an $11.2 billion deficit for the U.S. government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, and a new report by the Center of Federal Financial Institutions estimates the PBGC will be broke by 2020. In principle, corporations are required to contribute enough money to the PBGC to cover all future pension payments. Douglas Elliott is president and author of the Coffee Report.
Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation was set up like the FDIC to guarantee bank deposits. The PBGC guarantees that if you are promised a pension, that company goes bankrupt, and there's not enough money in the pension fund, you'll still get the pension.
But employers are getting around their obligations by abusing flexibility on the timing of their contributions.
It was kind of masked in the 90s when everybody was seeming to do much better than they really were, and stock prices were high, which helped pension funds that invested in stocks, and it also made it less likely that companies would go bankrupt.
Elliott says that to date, American corporations have promised their employees more than $1.5 trillion worth of pension payments.
After shutting down five factories throughout Michigan and Ohio for 5 weeks, Michigan sugar workers were back on the job Monday. The workers at a Ohio factory staged the walkout out of displeasure of having a contract imposed on them by the company. The workers set up picket lines at all of the company's factories, including four in Michigan. And when workers at the other factories refused to cross, Michigan Sugar was forced to go to the National Labor Relations Board, claiming that it was illegal for the Ohio workers to strike at Michigan factories. Then LRB disagreed, and the company finally sat down with negotiators late last week. After reaching a compromise, work at the factories returned to normal on Monday.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The federal budget is graying, according to a new report by the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Researchers found social welfare spending for elders was nearly four times greater than that for children in the year 2000, an increase of 20%. Higher medical expenses for the elderly were cited as one of the main reasons for the discrepancy, despite higher rates of poverty for children. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Got a song about a soldier riding somewhere on a train.
And welcome back.
Empty sleep into his shoulder.
1998, George Bush was governor of the state of Texas, notes the Sunday Herald. Carla Faye Tucker was then facing execution by lethal injection, a former teen prostitute. She'd committed murder after a three-day drug binge and later underwent a religious conversion in jail. As a born-again Christian, just like Bush, many religious leaders wanted her life spared. Tucker even appeared on Larry King's TV show to discuss her case. Bush was caught out by a reporter mocking the condemned woman. This was Time Magazine, as I recall. Sneering at her, he put on a whiny voice, pouted his lips, and whimpered, "Please don't kill me." Significantly, the newspaper notes, Carla Faye Tucker never asked for mercy, even when on Larry King's program. But Bush chose to make fun of her anyway. And somebody in recovery doing cocaine at Camp David while his daddy is president, it doesn't sound to me like that's being in recovery. And this, of course, the testimony of his sister-in-law, Sharon Bush, said in front of three witnesses on two different occasions. Interesting stuff. What kind of guy is it that we've got in the White House here? 1-866-889-8894. Your thoughts on this? Jeff in Denver is on the line. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hi, three quick points. First of all, the Rove Hatfield thing sounds kind of like the Bill Frist fake ricin thing.
Yeah, can you speak up a little, Jeff?
Yeah, it sounds like Bill Frist fake ricin, where Bill Frist's office was spying on the Democrats, and when they got caught, suddenly fake ricin appeared in Frist's office.
You're right. I had completely forgotten about that. Somebody on his staff had hacked into Teddy Kennedy's computer for over a year. And not just Kennedy, but a bunch of the Democrats, but yes. You know, in large part Teddy Kennedy, to find out the Democrats' strategies on the Republican judicial appointments, which is a crime that would, you know, what they were trying to do at Watergate, you know, unsuccessfully, was to bug the Democrats. Frist's office actually did it. And you're right. As soon as the news story came out, all of a sudden there's some powder that they find outside his office.
Yeah,
this must be ricin.
It was not just an allegation. That was an actual fact. Orrin Hatch confirmed it, too.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah. As soon as the story came out, all of a sudden they changed. Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. Now, that was
and
your
quickly,
number one.
Okay, quickly commenting on something from yesterday, then coming to Kitty Kelly. When you mentioned the over 20 million acres of wetlands and the tens of thousands of miles of streams that are not protected by clean water, 20 million acres is equivalent land area to the state of Maine, almost as big as Indiana.
Yeah.
And the Missouri River is 2,500 miles long, and this is tens of thousands of miles of streams.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a major portion of the U.S. is not protected. And, of course, each one of these protected, non-protected areas affects many protected areas because it flows into those.
Sure. Sure, and Bush just pulled the plug on clean water protections on all of this stuff.
Yes.
The story we reported on yesterday, yes. Okay.
And as far as Kitty Kelly's concerned, it's really interesting hearing her interviewed. She holds her own.
Yeah.
I'd love to see her talk to Bush or something like that. She should debate Bush.
She's been through it. I mean, she came out with all these revelations about Frank Sinatra and his family all huffed and puffed and his lawyers got involved. Turned out everything nothing in the book could be knocked down. She outed the royal family and you know, the Charles and Camilla and all that. Turns out it was all true.
Well, we could say that her book is based on better evidence than the invasion of Iraq.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's better researched. It's Iraq was innuendos. This is, you know, stuff you can't take apart in a lot of cases. I'm much more impressed with it than I thought I would be.
Yeah, Iraq was worse than innuendo. Jeff, thanks
for the
call.
Yeah, Dick Cheney keeps on giving false information. Kitty Kelly has better information than Cheney.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Jeff, for the call. Good to hear from you.
Take care.
1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Joe in New Jersey on the line. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hello, Tom. Hey, I was really surprised that there was no big terror alert after the Republican convention, like the Democratic convention.
Well, the terror alert had continued through the Republican convention. I said, you know, it started 5 weeks before the convention. And in fact, I had Alan Ratner here on the show, the Talk Radio News Service, and I said, I'll bet you that this thing, this terror alert, has been set up really to cover all the way over to the Republican convention. She said, it's not going to last that long. I said, you just wait.
Really, I mean, it was so blatantly obvious what happened was they, right after the Democratic convention, to stop Kerry from getting a bounce from it, they announced that the terror alert had just gone up with four-year-old information.
Yeah.
And it worked. It prevented Kerry from getting a bounce.
Yeah, they grabbed the headlines.
Bush did get his bounce because there was nothing to distract the media from the convention.
Yeah. Yeah, they're masters of grabbing the news cycle and cynically exploiting the mechanism of governance to do that. I mean, this is something that
what really has upset me, though, is that no one really pointed it out, especially on the left, that what we were just talking about, that this happened. I mean,
I was pointing it out. I think other people were pointing it out. It didn't. It never made national news. Nobody in the national news pointing it out.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, like ABC, CBS, NBC. This is a national show, but I mean, nobody in the official news business.
Tom, keep up the good work, and love your show, man.
Thanks, Joe. I absolutely will do my very best, and thanks for listening. Do appreciate it. 21 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico, on the line. Hey, Chuck, how's the making of bombs going there?
Well, they make them pretty good here. There's no question about it.
Very efficient.
But I'm not involved in the making. There's other things that they do up here besides make hydrogen bombs.
Great.
About 20 years ago, my wife went through Alcoholics Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to take exception to your caller before the bottom of the hour, because I went through with the families and Al-Anon and what have you. And once you get to the point where you're really, really, really going to make a breakthrough, that's when you basically, you come out with it. You just say, look, I've had a problem. It's a medical problem. And the main thing that Alcoholics Anonymous always says is, I am a recovering alcoholic. I am not recovered. I am not done. I am always in the process of recovery.
Yeah, and this is where Bush has separated himself from that. He has never gone through any sort of recovery process. He's never gone through any sort of treatment process. There are people who say that his problem is that he's a dry drunk. He's an untreated alcoholic. And he, in fact, is suggesting that because of his religious conversion, that it's all over. You know, flip a switch, it's changed.
Well, Tom,
and now
Tom,
it comes
you know,
out he's snorting cocaine at Camp David, and he's drinking and passing out in the White House.
Or Tom, you know, one of the most chilling things that you mentioned is, this is a guy that's got his finger, well, you know, maybe it's not so much on nuclear missiles anymore, but he can sure send the U.S. Army into Iraq.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they always said to my wife and to all the people that were in her recovery unit was that, look, if you don't admit that there's a problem, you're just going to move it from alcohol to something else.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's you know, move from one addiction to another. And,
exactly.
And, yeah, and there are those who suggest that he's moved his addiction to power and to religion.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to deny that, because it certainly looks that way to me. But I'm low on the pecking order. I'm on the roster of psychotherapists in the state, but I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, and I'm certainly not an expert on alcoholism, and I have never been through AA, so I can't speak to those issues specifically. But just as a
Tom,
reasonably informed
observer,
you know.
Yeah, maybe it would be a really, I mean, I don't want to tell you how to run your show, but maybe you could get somebody on as a guest who could talk about this.
Yeah, they're out there. They're out there. You know, frankly, up until Kitty Kelly did this book and did the apparently the really meticulous research, I've seen her interviewed three times now, and I've seen people try to take her apart. I was trying to stay above this topic. I just figured, okay, you know, I don't want this show to devolve into gossip kind of stuff. But I think this has gone way beyond this. This is now, we have this whole long series of lies, intimidation attempts, of bizarre behavior, you know, making fun of Carla Faye Tucker, putting to death over 120 people in the state of Texas. That accounted for about a third of all the executions in the United States on George Bush's watch. You know, just enthusiastically, apparently. This is from 1995 to 2000, 120 executions. Yeah, a full third of all the executions in the United States. He objected to a bill to stop the state from executing people with mental illness. He vetoed a bill that the Texas legislature had passed unanimously that required the appointment of a lawyer to anybody accused of a capital crime within 20 days. Now, most states have laws that say if you're accused of a capital crime, you have to have a lawyer appointed to you within 72 hours.
Right.
In Texas, they don't even get it within 20 days, and he vetoed it. He vetoed it. And it's like, you know, this is a guy who, you know...
That's the president of the United States of America.
Yeah, and up until the age of 30, he pretty much didn't do anything at all. And then he decides he's going to get into the oil business with money from the Bin Laden family and his Saudi buddies. And he lost $2 million of other people's money in oil ventures. And up until 1990, he walks away with an $840,000 profit because of an inside trading deal. One of his companies was called Arbusto, which he thought meant bush in Spanish. It actually means shrub.
Yeah.
Harkin Energy at the time, his father is president of the United States. Harkin is about to go down, and he sells his stock and walks away with this big bunch of cash, despite the legal requirement to notify the Securities and Exchange Commission. He had inside knowledge that the company was going down the tubes. He sells out, walks away with a big profit, leaves the stockholders holding the bag. What's her name goes to jail for this.
Yeah.
Martha Stewart.
Right.
He walks away with a cash that he goes to buy the Texas Rangers, and then they hit up the town of Arlington, the suburb of Dallas, for $191 million in tax money to build a new stadium. And his investment in the Rangers goes in value from $640,000 to $15.4 million.
It's just a whole history of insider deals and just absolute shamelessness.
And one last thing on a slightly different topic, if you have any information on this. Did you hear that interview with Condoleezza Rice over the weekend?
I saw one on one of the Sunday shows.
If you could take a look into that, because I know you do better research than the rest of us, but this was absolutely, talk about shameless. Outrageous.
Well, she wasn't answering questions, and her voice, the thing that I thought was interesting is her voice kept cracking.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it, and I've never heard it do that before. It was like she was obviously under intense pressure.
Yeah, the sound of her voice, I'm a real auditory person and notice those things, and the sound of her voice was like somebody had, you know, had thumb screws on one of her toes or something.
Yeah.
It's like her voice just kept cracking, and I thought, you know, it's because she's lying. She's under incredible stress. And
she's going to go to jail if she's not careful. She's got to know that by now.
Yeah. And see, this is the thing. I mean, if Bush gets elected and the Democrats take either the House or the Senate and any investigations go forward, he could go down the same way Nixon did.
You know, and you know, it's funny you said, what's the good news about Bush getting reelected? And honestly, that's it.
Yeah, it wouldn't be reelected. It would be elected because he was selected the first time. But in any case, the problem, of course, is that the next president will get to appoint three or four members of the Supreme Court, which is
not if we get him booted in the next 6 months.
Yeah, possibly. Although then you just have another. Then you'd have Dick Cheney as president. I mean, that talk about a strategy.
Well, we got to do it. We got to do a Nixon. The first thing you do is you get rid of Spiro Agnew. Then you get rid of Nixon.
Yeah. Well, time will tell. Time will tell. From your lips to God's ears, as they say.
As they say. Thanks,
Chuck,
Tom.
Chuck, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894 Our telephone number. Ed in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are nice day here in New Mexico.
Great.
Listen, I've been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous for 18 years now,
mm-hmm.
and the notion of anonymity does not mean that we don't feel a responsibility to the rest of society to let them know basically, especially in a position like being the president, what our past history has been truthfully.
Yeah.
Anonymity is something where you don't reveal somebody else's membership, but you certainly can talk about your own membership and your experience.
Yeah. Well, that was my point. I mean, this guy is president of the United States, wants to be president of the United States, wants to continue being president of the United States. I think he ought to answer these questions truthfully. And the big question that he ought to answer truthfully is, why has he been lying about so many of these things, ranging from getting his girlfriend an abortion in the 1970s, now three people have come forward with sworn affidavits about this, his own cocaine use, his cocaine arrest and conviction, his father pulling strings to get him into the Air National Guard, his not showing up, his ducking out on the flight physicals when they started doing random drug tests. I mean, all of these things, I think, are things that really need to be raised. Ed, thanks for the call. Good to hear
from
you. I appreciate it. Let's go to Rich in Chicago. Hey, Rich, what's up? Rich, oh, I'm sorry. Hang on just a second here. I pushed the wrong button. Rich, you're on the air now. There you go.
Okay, great. Hey, very interesting. I'm also an alcoholic. I've been for 10 years, and I started to notice this craziness with his resentment towards Saddam way early, and I always joked with myself that this was like the actions of a dry drunk before I realized that he really was a dry drunk.
Yeah. Yeah, now the dry drunk is a phrase that anybody in AA is familiar with, but the average American really doesn't understand. If you are a member of that brotherhood, you want to share, not being dry drunk,
sure.
But being a recovering
absolutely.
Alcoholic.
Absolutely. The way we look at it, because you're affected, primarily we look at it as a disease that affects the body and the mind.
Right.
But just because you disassociate with alcohol doesn't mean that you're getting better. You always need to be working on the mental part of the disease, as another earlier caller had brought up, that we're always in recovery and trying to get better. In fact, today, while I work on my recovery, I always use Bush as my litmus test, and I always think, what would the president do in this situation? And I try to do the opposite. You know,
now, come on, Rich. You don't mean that.
What's that?
You don't literally mean it. You're being facetious.
Well, to a certain degree, but... you know, to stand up on a pulpit and say, we need to kill these people, we need to do this, we need to do that, is also putting us in a position to take darts from other people.
Yeah, yeah. You know what concerns me, Rich, also, you're talking about his abusive personality and Carla Faye, is the way he gloats over having killed members of Al-Qaeda. Now, it's perfectly appropriate to conquer the enemy, but gloating is a little different.
Yeah, but
Rich, got to go. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 10 minutes before the hour.
This is Vionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Remember the election of 2000? Frightening. But we can all thank our lucky stock portfolios that when the shouting and those silly recounts were over, the Bush-Cheney team emerged with a clear 5-4 majority. Well, we don't want to go through that again, so you can bet your last $1 million that the next election won't be all messy. No dimpled ballots, no hanging chads, in fact, no paper at all. Thanks to our good friends at Diebold and their touchscreen voting machine, we can ensure that swing state swing our way. Just think, Chad will be just another country to liberate, and all Americans can look forward to 4 more wars. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
On September 17th, I'll be broadcasting live on WTKG AM 1230 in Grand Rapids at the Celebration Cinema, noon to 3 p.m. at the corner of Knapp and East Beltline. Drop by early at 11 a.m. in the Wave Room for a get-together, then listen to the show. At 4 p.m. after the show, I'll be at Schuller Bookstore on 28th Street for a book signing. For more information, call 616-776-5541. That's 616-776-5541.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
A group hopes to persuade the federal government to drain a huge reservoir in Utah. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. When the Glen Canyon Dam was completed in 1966, it created Lake Powell, a vast reservoir stretching 186 miles from the dam in northern Arizona up through southeastern Utah. The project was controversial from the start because it submerged the scenic Glen Canyon, and it's still generating controversy today. A group of activists at the Glen Canyon Institute want to breach the dam, drain the reservoir, and let the Colorado River run free. Chip Ward writes about the effort in his new book, Hope's Horizon. He says the proposal offered in 1996 was first seen as outrageous.
Well, as it turns out, that proposal to drain Lake Powell makes an awful lot of sense. For one thing, Lake Powell traps huge amounts of sediment that have radically transformed the ecosystem downstream in the Grand Canyon. The reservoir drowned at one of the most beautiful canyon systems in the country, probably more beautiful than any national park that we have set aside. And even as a means of storing water, the lake, when it reached its fullest level, was seeing more evaporation off the surface area than water that was coming in.
Lake Powell loses 22 billion cubic feet of water to evaporation each year. Ward says that's become a critical issue.
Of course, at this point, because of this prolonged drought that we're experiencing in the West, Lake Powell has started to drain itself. It's actually down below half of its capacity at this point, and canyons that we have not seen for 20 years are suddenly reemerging from the lake and are accessible again.
The Glen Canyon proposal faces enormous resistance from Utah politicians as well as marina owners and other economic interests around Lake Powell. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
I like country stores with crooked floors, an old man on the front porch, and one lane bridges on a rural route.
That's got to be Mark LeGrand. That's great music. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here back with you. A friend of the Bush family. Friend mostly of George Sr. and Barbara says, according to Kitty Kelly, quote, George has no humility whatsoever about being president. He really thinks he deserves the office, that it's his by merit, not default. With each political job he's had, he's gotten worse, more arrogant. Now he's unbearable. End quote. 1-866-889-8894. Jim in Michigan on the line. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I've called once before, and I appreciate your program. Hey, can you tell me if... Is it true that Kerry and Bush are cousins?
No.
I've been reading about on the Internet.
No, they're not.
They're not?
No. In fact, there's some guy in England who does, like, genealogies that go back to, like, the 10th century or something. And Bush is distantly related to one part of the British royal family, and Kerry's distantly related to some other part of some other royal family. But, you know, that goes back, you know, 15, 20, 30 generations. No, they're absolutely unrelated. Absolutely unrelated.
Okay. Yep. Well, then I shouldn't take that to heart, then.
No, there's a million conspiracy theories on the web, Jim. That's one that duck doesn't fly. I got to move along here. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Rama in Santa Fe, last minute or so of the program, and this hour of it anyway. What's up, Rama?
Greetings. I just wanted to say, did you also know that Kitty Kelly in her book talks about Laura Bush being gay as well as Shrub being gay?
No, I didn't. I have not heard either of those. Of course, the book isn't out yet. Even though it's number one on Amazon, it hasn't started shipping yet. But I haven't heard any reference to that.
There's a website, www.rense.com.
Oh, yeah. I know, I'm familiar with it.
This is also connected with Sherman Skolnick, and it is absolutely true. And I'll just leave it at that.
Well, okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Rama. You know, I got to say about Rents.com, I mean, sometimes there's some really hot stories that are actually being broken on that website. And sometimes, in my experience, it's a little on the edge in terms of conspiracy stuff. So I think it's a great website. I'm not sure. Well, we'll see. Her book will be out next week. We'll report back. And, you know, bisexuality, that's no indictment in my mind. Anyhow, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. You're listening to the True People's Radio, the place where smart people get their news. And, yeah, perhaps even more significantly, where we dare to ask the vital question, is Walmart a person? Should corporations be persons? I don't think so. Or should George Bush be president any longer? Well, that's a big negative in my mind.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local Seattle?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2000.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Hotel workers in three of the country's largest cities are prepared to go on strike. Housekeepers, bellmen, and other workers in Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco are planning the strike in an attempt to pressure employers into signing contracts that would enhance the voice of unions in nine major hotels. In addition to typical strike demands over wages and benefits, the demand of some of those workers is a contract that would expire at the same time as those for hotel workers in other cities, essentially giving the hotel unions more negotiation leverage across the country.
Several large bankruptcies have swung a $19 billion surplus into an $11.2 billion deficit for the U.S. government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, and a new report by the Center of Federal Financial Institutions estimates the PBGC will be broke by 2020. In principle, corporations are required to contribute enough money to the PBGC to cover all future pension payments. Douglas Elliott is president and author of the Coffee Report.
Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation was set up like the FDIC to guarantee bank deposits. The PBGC guarantees that if you are promised a pension, that company goes bankrupt, and there's not enough money in the pension fund, you'll still get the pension.
But employers are getting around their obligations by abusing flexibility on the timing of their contributions.
It was kind of masked in the 90s when everybody was seeming to do much better than they really were, and stock prices were high, which helped pension funds that invested in stocks, and it also made it less likely that companies would go bankrupt.
Elliott says that to date, American corporations have promised their employees more than $1.5 trillion worth of pension payments.
After shutting down five factories throughout Michigan and Ohio for 5 weeks, Michigan sugar workers were back on the job Monday. The workers at a Ohio factory staged the walkout out of displeasure of having a contract imposed on them by the company. The workers set up picket lines at all of the company's factories, including four in Michigan. And when workers at the other factories refused to cross, Michigan Sugar was forced to go to the National Labor Relations Board, claiming that it was illegal for the Ohio workers to strike at Michigan factories. The NLRB disagreed, and the company finally sat down with negotiators late last week. After reaching a compromise, work at the factories returned to normal on Monday.
Here's today's DalBob Report. The federal budget is graying, according to a new report by the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Researchers found social welfare spending for elders was nearly four times greater than that for children in the year 2000, an increase of 20%. Higher medical expenses for the elderly were cited as one of the main reasons for the discrepancy, despite higher rates of poverty for children. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Colin Powell did it with AOL Time Warner. John Ashcroft did it with Microsoft and Monsanto. Interior Secretary Gail Norton did it with BP Amoco. Condoleezza Rice did it with Chevron. Ooh, Donald Rumsfeld did it with Big Boy Sears, Kellogg, and Allstate.
Of course the Bush administration is in bed with its corporate donors.
George Bush did it with Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and Enron.
Did you think they were giving it away?
Paid for by BillionairesForBush.com.
Did you take full and proper notice of the political coming out of George W.'s twin daughters? Jenna and Barbara, the 22-year-old twins, have long been kept away from the political glare, but they're now adults who have just graduated from college, and both have been brought into the limelight by the Bush political campaign. Their first outing was for a photo spread and puff piece that ran in Vogue, the fashion magazine. Indeed, they looked splendiferous, beautifully made up and swathed in glamorous designer gowns, one by Oscar de la Renta and the other by Calvin Klein. No telling how many silkworms toiled to make this photo spread possible. But, tacky me, I couldn't help thinking as I viewed the photos, why aren't they in fatigues and Kevlar vests like other women and men their age? Jenna and Barbara announced that they would be joining their daddy's election campaign. But I had to ask myself, why aren't they joining their daddy's war? After all, he says that his war in Iraq is absolutely essential to our national security. And he insists that his policies over there are absolutely worth the troops who have been killed, worth the horrible mutilations of thousands of other soldiers, worth the horrific beheadings, worth the untold illnesses and poisonings being contracted by the men and women he has sent there, and worth the illegal conscription of tens of thousands of Americans forced to stay in this disastrous war beyond their legitimate tour of duty. So, if Daddy's war is absolutely worth the sacrifice of America's workaday families, why is it not worth the enlistment of his military-age family? This is Jim Hightower saying, maybe it's genetic. After all, George himself was a ferocious war hawk who used family connections to keep himself 8,000 miles from Vietnam. And now that he's president, he can start his own war that leaves his loved ones safely swathed in silk, while our families see our loved ones come home in shrouds.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend, Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Why conservatives must not vote for Bush. This is a piece by Doug Bandow of the Cato group, a Cato organization, Cato Institution? Cato.org is their website, anyhow. The libertarian think tank, shall we say. And just fascinating, the logic of this thing. This guy suggesting that, here's the subhead. A Reaganite argues that Bush is a dangerous, profligate, moralizing radical and that his reelection would be catastrophic both for the right and for America. Catastrophic for the right? See, I have this theory, as it were, that George W. may, if he gets elected, may end up being the victim of his own success, in as much as Grover Norquist, the whole agenda of these guys, has been, let's bring down the size of government by subterfuge. By the way, welcome back to our program. Tom Hartman here with you. Our number, if you'd like to call in, 1-866-889-8894. You can drop into our chat room by going to tomhartman.com and just click on the chat link, live chat, and it'll take you into the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, where folks are meeting at this moment, talking as the show goes on, and I read the messages during the breaks, and very often I learn something. It's a great to have it there. So anyhow, here Doug Bandow says, this was published, he says, George W. Bush presents conservatives with a fundamental challenge. Do they believe in anything other than power? Are they serious about their rhetoric on limited, constitutionally restrained government? Interesting question. And, you know, to get back to the success, the strategy of the Norquist guys has been it's a strategy that they call starve the beast. And basically, if you run the government, it's sort of like, you know, the theory is sort of like, you know, hitting the bottom
presumably in drug or alcohol use. You know, it's only when people really hit the bottom that they start looking up. You know, Chris Christopherson, been down so long it looks like up to me. Maybe that's not the best metaphor, but anyhow, the theory is that if you drive the country into bankruptcy, then the only way that it can emerge from that is by doing away with these awful socialist programs like Medicare and Social Security and the Department of Education and aid to dependent families and children and things like this that the conservatives believe that the government has no business doing, even if the majority of the people want it. So this is one of the real significant distinctions. The cons assert... The conservative assertion at its face is to hell with the will of the people. It doesn't matter what the majority of the people want. The majority of the people, according to the conservatives, are idiots. They will vote themselves social programs from their own tax dollars. They want to be taken care of. And that's wrong. We should have a society, they say, instead, where the rich get to get theirs and the poor are poor by choice because they're lazy bums. And who needs a middle class? You know, middle class is just a pain in the butt. We don't need unions. They're an irritation. This is the conservative agenda. Let's go back to the time of McKinley. Let's go back to the Victorian era. Let's go back to the world that Charles Dickens described in A Christmas Carol, where the Scrooges and Marleys of the world control pretty much everything, and the Bob Cratchits of the world, the workers, are desperately afraid of losing their jobs, so afraid that they'll put up with abuse from their employers. Heaven forbid that they would even think about something like a union. And they don't have health care, and their kids might die, and they can't buy Christmas dinner and all this sort of stuff. And if the working class is going to receive any crumbs from the table, then it's the result of the beneficence of the noblesse oblige, of the niceness of the Scrooge Marley ruling class. And the cure to the social ills is not to re-engineer society and say, listen, let's change the rules of the game in a way that's going to bring about a middle class. Let's have high marginal rates of taxation on obscenely huge incomes. Now, who gets to define obscenely? Well, I think at some level we can all agree. Somebody making over, what, $100 million a year ought to pay something in taxes? Something perhaps significant? But you know, the cons say no. It's, you know, this that's just not right. And because they can't get their fiscal agenda, their view of how society can be, they can't get it passed by democratic means because the American people won't vote for it. They won't go for it. They look at this and they go, this is nuts. We like Social Security. We like Medicare. We would like to have a single payer health care system in the United States, where everybody has health coverage. And we're willing to pay for it with our taxes. It works in every other industrialized country in the world. And by the way, we would like to have union protection. We would, and that requires government intervention in the marketplace. We understand that. To protect the right of unions to exist, we're all in favor of that. We would like to have the government-funded Securities and Exchange Commission snooping into the books of corporations so that our investments don't get wiped out, so that our 501ks and our pensions don't get frittered away, so we don't have situations like Enron. We would like to have that. No, the cons say. That's government interference. That's unnecessary regulations. Unnecessary to whom? So anyhow, when I talk about Bush's success, their theory is this starve the beast thing. Let's kill off the government by running it into the ditch. And George Bush is on the edge of great success in this. Biggest deficits in the history of the world. And if he gets elected, I mean, whoever gets elected in this election is going to have one huge problem to deal with. Two huge problems, really. The economy and Iraq. Both of which were created by George W. Bush. And whoever gets elected is either going to take the blame for those problems or is going to solve those problems. And frankly, there's no way in my mind that Bush can solve those problems. So if he gets elected, that might be the end of the Republican Party. And there are conservatives who are actually worried about this. Let's take a call here. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number 12 in Santa Fe. Hey, I appreciate you hanging on the line there. How you doing, number 12?
Hey,
I'm doing great. I'm parking the shade right now. I got a call in a minute, but I got three things I want to say to you.
Go for it.
I don't really have any opposition to welfare as long as you're a legal citizen. It's the illegals getting benefits. I don't really agree with that at all. Number two,
I'm not arguing with you, by the way.
Okay, I'm just saying that. It should be I think it should be a hand up, not a handout, and you should not, you know, come into this country illegal and expect to get things like that. Number two is I have this conspiratorial idea that alleged fake memo that Dan Rather used as evidence, I think maybe it was generated by the Bush campaign, so Rather would take the bait.
Take the bait. Yeah, that's what I said. I think Karl Rove did it, because Karl Rove did just about this exact same identical thing twice when he was running Bush's campaigns before.
That
bugging himself.
You would destroy CBS and you would destroy the Kerry campaign.
Yeah. And they succeed in seizing the news cycle and changing the subject from, did George get preferential treatment? Did George not show up for his drug test? To were these memos faked? Which is exactly what Karl Rove did when Ann Richards was, when George was in trouble running for governor. And all of a sudden, Karl Rove's office has been bugged. Who did it? Let's get the state police. Turns out it was Rove. Right?
And my third point being that you're talking about Bush. Everybody knows in New Mexico that Governor Richardson is a total lush. And on his, I have anecdotal stories, personal ones about the guy. And, you know, the Democrats in the state don't seem to have a problem with the guy being a heavy drinking kind of guy. And so, you know.
There's a difference, number 12, I think, between being a lush and being an abusive drunk. I mean, you know, it's if Laura really had to flee the family home repeatedly because George was so abusive, and this is what one of the allegations that Kitty Kelly makes, and she says she's got numerous sources for this, and not to mention all the other stories of things that George did, you know, that when he was living in Alabama, you know, he smashed a chandelier because it was too bright in the room, right, and the family tried for a year to get him to pay for it, and he refused to, and on and on. I mean, this goes beyond just heavy drinking.
Anyway, I don't want to break any confidences right now, but I have numerous stories about Governor Richardson because I drive a cab.
Yeah.
And I'll just leave it at that.
In my mind, that's for the folks in New Mexico to sort out. It's not my problem. George W. Bush, however, is my president here in Vermont as well. But I understand, you know, if this was a New Mexico call-in show and that's all we were doing was New Mexico, I'd say, you know, let's talk about that and let's take that on.
Yeah.
And, you know,
anyway,
but,
so those are my 3 points for the day.
Okay, good to hear from you. Thanks for the call. And you got to come up with stuff that you can argue with me about better. You know, it's good to hear.
Know. We can talk about guns if you want to.
Oh no, we've done that. I think we've done that. Thanks, number 12. Good to hear from you. Okay. Keep up the good work. Keep up the good driving. 17 minutes after the hour, Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan, on the line. Hey, Rick, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
I'm great.
Tuned in. I was listening to another talk show, and I skipped over to you. I want to see what they're saying on the other side of the issue, and then I want to hear the truth.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I got a memo 3 days ago. In fact, Media Matters asked me if they could reprint the thing because I forwarded it to them. And because I'm on the mailing list for a lot of these, you know, as a conservative talk show host, for a lot of these conservative groups and the RNC and whatnot, and I'm not sure which list it was generated. It came out of a PR firm that represents a bunch of right-wing companies, or causes, rather.
Right.
And this was 4 days ago. It was last Thursday, and it said, Kitty Kelly's book is coming out, and we are requesting that you go to black. That's a verbatim quote from the memo. Go to black. In other words, don't talk about it on the air.
Okay.
And so my guess is that the right wing, the con shows, the conservative shows, are actually, you know, following the talking points of the memo, which is to say that they're not talking about Kitty Kelly.
Wanted to talk about this so-called Memogate.
Uh-huh. So on the right-wing shows, they're not talking about Kitty Kelly. They're talking about Memogate.
Right. And
yeah,
you probably know O'Reilly is trying to go middle of the road here, and he's being attacked by some conservatives. But that was an interesting theory I just heard about the Karl Rove thesis.
Makes perfect sense.
First of all, we aren't really sure yet whether the documents are really forged, are we?
Well, in fact, there's increasing evidence that they weren't. And now just this morning, a guy has come out who was in the National Guard at that time. And actually, the guy's secretary yesterday said she didn't recall typing them, but
right.
She agreed with the content of them. She
sure.
said, you know, everybody in the office knew that Georgie was a lush and that there was
right.
all these problems with his family and that they shipped him off to Alabama because he was embarrassing his daddy, who was in Congress, and you know, blah-de-blah-de-blah.
Well, I think that's the point, you know, even if we can see that these documents were forged, and of course, whoever did that, they should track down who's responsible. But the real key issue is, are the surrounding charges and the beliefs that people... See, what I do is I look at the analogy of the O.J. Simpson case, where they wanted to make the issue whether Mark Furman used the N-word and whether he planted a glove. Now, I, as an observer of that trial, thought that even if he did use the N-word, which they proved he did on tape, and even if he had planted the glove, which they never proved he did, that still doesn't answer whether O.J. committed the murders, which I think he did. So in this case of Bush, the question is, was this guy a goof-off? And I think most people think he was.
Yeah, it's becoming increasingly obvious, and it might be worse than goof-off. That's the thing that gets me. 20 minutes past the hour. Thanks for the call, Rick. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Stick around.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17. Call now. 800-505-1546.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey, California, where is your tax money going? To Walmart, of course. A new study released by UC Berkeley reveals that the low wages paid at Walmart stores forces employees to accept about $86 million annually in public assistance programs. That includes $32 million annually in health-related service and $54 million per year in services such as food stamps and subsidized housing. Walmart employees in that state earn on average 31% less than workers in the retail sector as a whole.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, this is one of our problems. We are stuck between a rock and a hard place. So what if conservatives actually were to take Doug Bandow's advice and not vote for George W. Bush because he has betrayed conservative principles in their minds? Bandow notes, mounting deficits are likely to force eventual tax increases, reversing perhaps President Bush's most important economic legacy. This is bizarre, frankly. When a conservative says this, in my mind, it's bizarre, because a tax cut, when it's done with borrowed money, is not a tax cut. It's a tax deferral. It's a tax postponement, because eventually that money's going to have to be paid. And who's it going to have to be paid by? By the taxpayers, with interest. But anyhow, he sees this as Bush's most important economic legacy. And then he says the administration's foreign policy is an even greater shambles, with Iraq aflame and America increasingly reviled by friend and foe alike. Now, this is a conservative from the Cato Institute. Rather, he says, Bush routinely puts power before principle. The conservative revolt is starting, my friends. You know, everybody was saying it's going to start at the Republican convention. No, they kept the lid on it very well. Just like the Democrats are kind of keeping a lid on the progressive or liberal revolt against Kerry, saying things like, well, yeah, I would have voted for that authorization even if I knew what I know now, which had to be the most stupid thing that he has said so far. But I'll still vote for him. I mean, it's my guy, right or wrong, is that it? I guess it is. 26 minutes past the hour. Let's go to the phones here. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number if you'd like to be on the air. Dave in Humboldt County is with us. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, as always, I so much appreciate your willingness to explore and share reality with us. You do make us think. A few quick points. One is that if they can succeed in somehow discrediting the rather CBS reporter, at least creating the impression that they have, it will be a message to the rest of the media, which is so scared already to say word one to the detriment of the Bush team.
Sure, that's the whole point of it. I wouldn't be at all surprised to find out that Karl Rove, if these documents are forged, who knows? But if they are forged, it wouldn't surprise me at all to find out that Karl Rove was behind it, because it's absolutely consistent with political strategy that he has used in two other elections to get George Bush elected when things weren't going his way.
Well, I'm inclined to think that he didn't forge them. They're going to make it look like a forgery and convince us that they're forgeries, but it hits too close to home. I think they would have created something that could be discredited.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, if the originals were actually real, and then they go in and drop a superscript here, change a signature there, and then let them out.
I'm talking to a number of mental health professionals around, and I wish we could survey collectively a good number of them, because the general feeling, much unresolved anger within this man. Early abuse, rejection that he has generalized, and he is wanting to punish the world. He certainly wants to punish the country. He will be gratified if he can increase all kinds of deaths. And
he's clearly a punisher, Dave. I mean, you know, that was his whole thing when he was governor of Texas. You know, putting to death 120 people enthusiastically requires a certain type of personality.
He will be gratified if he can kill off the middle class, if he can put us all in the poorhouse. It will be some sort of a hollow punishment.
Are you saying this speaking as a psychologist or as an amateur politician?
I'm talking as one who's tried to observe as objectively as possible, knowing that it's been a cumulative thing. I do regard the man as psychopathic and a part of a team of psychopaths.
And you are a psychologist, right, Dave?
Well, I'm retired now, but I have been in the business. I've been a child psychologist, so I don't know if it's altogether fair to see myself as one who can analyze from a distance this.
Yeah.
But,
well,
you know, he has one of my colleagues here had a... You know the wonderful poem, The Circle Poem by Edwin Markham?
Yeah, I don't. But we don't have time to get into it right now, Dave. We've got to move on.
Another time.
Yeah, another time. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. Always good to hear from you. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
the Tom Hartman radio program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or a PR firm that says, don't talk about Kitty Kelly. For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Hotel workers in three of the country's largest cities are prepared to go on strike. Housekeepers, bellmen, and other workers in Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco are planning the strike in an attempt to pressure employers into signing contracts that would enhance the voice of unions in nine major hotels. In addition to typical strike demands over wages and benefits, the demand of some of those workers is a contract that would expire at the same time as those for hotel workers in other cities, essentially giving the hotel unions more negotiation leverage across the country.
Several large bankruptcies have swung a $19 billion surplus into an $11.2 billion deficit for the U.S. government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, and a new report by the Center of Federal Financial Institutions estimates the PBGC will be broke by 2020. In principle, corporations are required to contribute enough money to the PBGC to cover all future pension payments. Douglas Elliott is president and author of the Coffee Report.
Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation was set up like the FDIC to guarantee bank deposits. The PBGC guarantees that if you are promised a pension, that company goes bankrupt, and there's not enough money in the pension fund, you'll still get the pension.
But employers are getting around their obligations by abusing flexibility on the timing of their contributions.
It was kind of masked in the 90s when everybody was seeming to do much better than they really were, and stock prices were high, which helped pension funds that invested in stocks, and it also made it less likely that companies would go bankrupt.
Elliott says that to date, American corporations have promised their employees more than $1.5 trillion worth of pension payments.
After shutting down five factories throughout Michigan and Ohio for 5 weeks, Michigan sugar workers were back on the job Monday. The workers at a Ohio factory staged the walkout out of displeasure of having a contract imposed on them by the company. The workers set up picket lines at all of the company's factories, including four in Michigan. And when workers at the other factories refused to cross, Michigan Sugar was forced to go to the National Labor Relations Board, claiming that it was illegal for the Ohio workers to strike at Michigan factories. Then LRB disagreed, and the company finally sat down with negotiators late last week. After reaching a compromise, work at the factories returned to normal on Monday.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The federal budget is graying, according to a new report by the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Researchers found social welfare spending for elders was nearly four times greater than that for children in the year 2000, an increase of 20%. Higher medical expenses for the elderly were cited as one of the main reasons for the discrepancy, despite higher rates of poverty for children. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Start me up.
And welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's the bottom of the hour, the second hour of our program. Time for our report from the Talk Radio News Service. Ellen Ratner calling from Washington, D.C. with the news of the day. Hey, Ellen, what's up?
Well, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Start me up.
And welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's the bottom of the hour, the second hour of our program. Time for our report from the Talk Radio News Service. Ellen Ratner calling from Washington, D.C. with the news of the day. Hey, Ellen, what's up?
Well, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee today talked about Iraq. The administration, you know, announced that they were going to send about $3.5 billion from some of their allocations to the new key six areas, including security, oil infrastructure, economic development, and also forgive about $4 billion in debt owed to the U.S., and to also try and accelerate Iraqi employment and support democracy and government. Well, the State Department, Biden said, he said, we're at the end of our rope. He said every problem we've encountered is some of their allocations to the new key six areas, including security, oil infrastructure, economic development, and also forgive about $4 billion in debt owed to the U.S., and to also try and accelerate Iraqi employment and support democracy and government. Well, Biden said, he said, we're at the end of our rope. He said every problem we've encountered has been predicted, but there has been no learning curve from the State Department or from the Army or from anybody, from the armed forces, from the mistakes.
Yeah.
And then the witnesses said, well, they're still planning to hold national elections in Iraq in January. But then the committee, including especially Biden, said he didn't think Iraq would be stable by then and we wouldn't meet the deadline.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of not rocket science.
You know, in my mind, the Civil War has already begun. Here's the popular government, some of them, many of them, and then the Kurds in the north, they're perfectly happy just having autonomy. They'd like Kurdistan to be Kurdistan again. In fact, they'd like a little bit back from Turkey, you know.
Well, when Jim Pinkerton and myself and Chalene Espinoza were there last year, we said you must, you know, you should probably split the country in three. It was put together by the British. It doesn't naturally go together.
Right.
And the people don't want to be together.
Yeah, and I, in my opinion, if we don't do that intentionally, quickly, they're going to do it for us, and it's going to be bloody, and it's going to be a mess, and it's going to be a mess that we created.
It already is going to be.
Well, yeah,
mess. There was another hearing today. This was the Committee on Energy and Commerce, and it was in the this had been called essentially by Dingell of Michigan and Waxman of California into the inquiry into the Cheney Task Force. Well.
Which Cheney Task Force? The oil?
The Energy Task
Force.
That's right.
Yeah.
And in May of 2001, they had requested an investigation into this task force. Well, today was a hearing, they had put together this House Resolution 745, which requested the names of the individuals. Well, today, Barton, who's chairman of the committee, dismissed the inquiry. He said it was partisan political exercise intended to embarrass and detract the Bush administration from the Bush administration and the Cheney administration, and he said that he wasn't going to allow all of the opening statements to happen today. At which point, Waxman said the whole committee was a farce.
Do you think that
actually happened at the Capitol today?
That's amazing. Do you think that is there some truth to it?
That the committee's a farce?
Well, that's a political witch hunt kind of thing, you know?
Well, I mean, I think that the request for the names of the task force happened it happened even before 9/11.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
interesting.
So how is that a witch hunt that's based on this year's politics?
Yeah, well, that's a good point. But, you know, which based on 3 years ago. But I mean, the bottom line is if a politician has done something wrong, as apparently Dick Cheney has done here, in bringing in all the energy companies, all the oil companies, bringing in Kenny Lay, cutting a deal, to basically hand over the energy security of the United States to a bunch of big corporations, hand them $18 billion in corporate welfare, and in a meeting in April, carving up the country of Iraq and deciding which oil companies from what countries are going to buy what oil from which oil field. If they actually did that, and all the evidence is quite clear that, you know, they did, they should be held accountable for it, on the one hand. On the other hand, and there are political consequences to it. So you could argue, hey, this is a political thing, or you could argue, hey, it's real, and it's both. It's both, right?
couple other things. Today, Senator Kerry made a speech on the economy. The White House immediately refuted it, and basically, this morning, Scott McClellan said the president has tried to make tax cuts permanent. He disagreed with the fact that this is only going to cost $74 billion. Several people said it's going to cost a lot more. When asked about the transition to Social Security and how much that's going to cost, he said inaction will cost also, and that he wants American workers to have more of their nest egg.
Yeah. Yeah, therefore, we're going to turn it over to Goldman Sachs.
You got it.
Yeah.
And the stock market. That's right.
Yeah, and let them take their piece out of our nest egg. Yeah.
Now, one last thing. I was sitting today next to the TASS reporter, and he had been a TASS reporter under the Soviet time, and he's still a TASS reporter in Washington. He's been here for years. And we were asking him what he thought of Russia and Putin and all that, and he's very, very disturbed about it. But he said that most of the Russian people are just so willing, you know, they've been so taught all these years to go along with the Soviet-style economy for 70 you know, some years, that they're not putting up much of a complaint.
Well, they've had about 6 years of opportunity to experiment with something that they think is democracy, and it was done in a laissez-faire fashion, you know, throw the doors open, bring in the oligarchs. And I think I've been to Russia. I was in Russia before the fall of the Soviet Union. I was in Russia after the fall of the Soviet Union. The last time I was in Russia was just a couple of years ago. And things for many people got really, really miserable. I mean, they were rough before. They got really miserable during this super privatization thing. And now Putin today, yesterday's Wall Street Journal, a really great article on the front page, but talking about how Putin has said that their equivalent of what would be the governor of a state here in the United States are no longer going to be directly elected by the people, but instead are going to be appointed by Putin himself and then approved by the state legislatures, the equivalent of state legislatures. And, you know, it's the end of democracy in Russia is what we're seeing. But they have a 1,000-year history of living under kings. I mean, they don't understand what democracy is.
That is for sure. It's interesting. There's that joke about, you know, Stalin goes to hell and Khrushchev goes to hell and the Tsar goes to hell. And you always ask him, you know, how things are, and they say, oh, everything's fine. You know, the secret police is doing fine. And he says, well, how's the vodka? Well, we increased the alcohol level 1%. He says, for 1%, you had a revolution. I mean, that's really sort of how it is. It's interesting. The White House today said that they do fully support the Russians' need to fight the war on terror. However, they have some concerns about the steps that were announced, and they will be discussing it with their Russian counterpart.
Yeah, this administration has so botched our international diplomacy. I mean, the relationship with Russia and with China, for that matter, it's just an absolute time bomb waiting to happen. I mean, Russia is a country that has nuclear weapons that in minutes could be pointed towards us. Historically, have been, flip the switch and reprogram them, and Bush has. We've actually given refuge to one of the leaders of the Chechen separatist movement that we call the separatists, the freedom fighters, and the Russians call terrorists. And, you know, it would be the equivalent. I mean, how would we respond if Russia gave bin Laden's number two guy political asylum? That's what we've done. I mean, it's mind-boggling to me. Anyhow,
I do not disagree with the thing you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. But you're the news reporter, so... Interesting, interesting story. Ellen, thanks for the information for the day.
Thank you. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Great to hear from you. Thanks. Okay. Talk to you soon. It's 17 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. I'd like you to just think for a minute about what might happen if the conservatives actually got out here. Folks like Doug Bandow from the Cato Institute. Who writes, official spending numbers understate the problem, that understate defense costs by $500 billion over the coming decade. The administration lied about the likely cost of Medicare. It declined to include in budget proposals any numbers for maintaining Iraq. This is all true, by the way. And he's saying, therefore, this guy, the so-called Patriot Act, threatens some of our basic civil liberties that make America worth defending. This from the conservative with the Cato Institution. By his own admission, he doesn't do nuance and doesn't read. This is, this is Doug, what's his name again? Bandow, here, writing about George W. Bush. By his own admission, he doesn't do nuance and doesn't read. He doesn't appear to reflect on his actions and seems unable to concede even the slightest mistake, nor is he willing to hold anyone else responsible for anything. It is a damning combination. John Kerry may flip-flop, but at least he realizes that circumstances change and sometimes require changed policies. He doesn't cowardly flee at the first mention of accountability. This from a conservative. And he's saying, serious conservatives must fear for the country if Bush is reelected. Is Kerry really likely to initiate more unnecessary wars, threaten more civil liberties, and waste more tax dollars? Serious conservatives, he says, should deny their votes to Bush. Interesting. Here's my thoughts on this. A Bush victory would mean, if Bush gets elected in November, you can take this to the bank. I'm telling you, it's going to be the end of the conservative movement having any significant influence in the United States. They think they've had power. They're starting to realize, no, they haven't had power. It's the neocons who've had power, who are not true conservatives. And Bush's allegiance is not to conservative principles, it's to power. And he's been willing to bankrupt his nation in order to do that. He's been willing to sacrifice the lives of tens of thousands of human beings in order to do that. He's been willing to lie to the United States and the world in order to do that. He's been willing to destroy the reputation of the United States all over the world, to alienate our allies, to antagonize people who have nuclear weapons that could be pointed at him, all in the service of power and wealth, because that's all he knows. It's all he's known all his life. And the reason that the conservatives are going to go down in flames, are going down in flames, is because they are even the modern conservative, even going back to Barry Goldwater, and who in many ways I still admire, and in 1964 I actually wanted to see elected. I went door to door for his campaign. It's the truth. Is because it's a utopianistic worldview. Ayn Rand, Atlas Shrugged, all this stuff. It's even Edmund Burke. I mean, they're all utopianists. It's all based on the concept of noblesse oblige, that we'll have a noble ruling class and they'll understand their obligations and these corporations are going to take care of us. Don't worry. And so, of course, you always blame the other of what you're trying to do. So they say, oh, well, the liberals just want you to have a nanny state. No, we would like to have the kind of country that we would like to have where we have some, defense against powers like huge multinational corporations. But because the cons belief structure only works on paper, it doesn't work in real application. Every time you get significant movements in the conservative direction in the United States, it's crashed us into depressions. In the 1850s, in the 1890s, in the 1920s, and right now, every time, what really actually works is something in the middle. Some government involvement in the marketplace and, a fair amount of freedom in the marketplace. Something in the middle. And because their system only works on paper, and they've had power now, and they've demonstrated that it doesn't work, they're going to go down in flames. And I'm telling you, if Bush gets elected, the only hope of the conservatives is for Kerry to get elected so that they'll be on the outside again and they can yell and scream and make noise and pretend like their system actually could work. Mary Ann in Arcata has been patiently waiting on the line. Hey, Mary Ann, thank you for the call. What's up?
Yes, good morning, Tom. It is still morning out here in in Arcata. Yes, you were talking about the intelligence of George W. Bush. And I don't know if anybody mentioned it, but in the summer of 1999, Governor Bush was on 60 Minutes with Mike Wallace. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about that whole summer about all the convicts on death row in Texas.
Right.
And so Mike Wallace asked him, and he said, Governor Bush, do you believe that all those on death row in Texas are guilty? And he said, yes, they were found guilty in a court of law.
Yeah.
In other words, the jury knows,
Yeah.
The jury, they were there. There were never any false witnesses. And that's what he believed. And I thought, my goodness, to have a man like that for president. But
yeah, naive, black and white thinking. This is James Keene, who's the head of the 9/11 Commission, was formerly the governor of Illinois, and I believe he's the guy. I could be wrong, but I believe he's the guy who stopped, who suspended the death penalty in Illinois because they had project,
yeah.
You know, they because of DNA testing, they discovered that something like 10% of the people on death row were actually innocent.
Exactly.
And in every state where they've actually looked at, you know, systematically in an organized method, you know, using DNA testing, they've gone back, they've found roughly 10% of the people on death row are demonstrably innocent. It can be proven that they're innocent. And yet
right.
they're on
but he wouldn't allow that, did he?
No,
at
he put,
least
he,
not at that time. He wouldn't have them tested for DNA.
No, instead he put 120 people to death, and
right.
no regrets.
This is
not a man that I think we should be leading the free world. Marianne,
right.
thanks for the call.
Okay.
Good to hear from you.
Okay, thanks.
10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you. Stick around for more of the True People's Radio. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies. On September 17th, I'll be broadcasting live on WTKG AM 1230 in Grand Rapids at the Celebration Cinema, noon to 3 p.m. at the corner of Knapp and East Beltline. Drop by early at 11 a.m. in the Wave Room for a get-together, then listen to the show. At 4 p.m. after the show, I'll be at Schuller Bookstore on 28th Street for a book signing. For more information, call 616-776-5541. That's 616-776-5541.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Scientists in Europe are paying close attention to the ocean currents that keep them warm. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. England, Norway, and other countries around the North Atlantic Ocean would have very chilly climates if it were not for a great ocean current that brings warm water from the tropics. Scientists are examining this ocean current to get a better understanding of what it's doing and how it might change. Merrick Srokas is the science coordinator with the Natural Environment Research Council in England. He's part of an international team that's examining the status of the Atlantic current to see if it's showing signs of change or even failure. The technical name for this current is the thermohaline circulation. Soroka says it has changed in the past, and those shifts are connected to major and relatively quick changes in climate.
Data from marine sediments and ice cores suggests that rapid changes in climate have taken place, rapid being over a period of 10 years rather than the sort of 100 years that we normally think of or longer, and that these changes are related to, or at least some of the changes are related to, changes in the thermohaline circulation of the North Atlantic.
Soroka says variations in the ocean current might trigger rapid climate changes around the North Atlantic. If that happened, some countries might experience more severe winters and shorter growing seasons. Soroka says the probability of such a change is fairly low, but if it did happen, it would have a major impact. The European research team has worked with scientists from the United States to deploy sensors across the Atlantic Ocean that will measure water temperature and salinity. These are critical elements of the thermohaline circulation, and they could change as the Earth's atmosphere grows warmer. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
You swift boat liars, you would carry. Who risked his life while you withdrew? And now you're putting kids in harm's way. Does your conscience bother you?
That's a good question, does it, George?
AWOL in Alabama.
AWOL in Alabama.
Disappeared.
Where'd he go?
AWOL in Alabama.
And welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And, oops, I lost my window there for a moment. Tony in Washington, D.C. on the air, or on the line. Hey, Tony, you're on the air. What's up?
How you doing? Rant on. That's all I got to say.
Okay.
Can you please tell me where you got that information from, the Cato Institute? And number two, can you think you can get this guy, if he's dared to, I don't know if the Brownsville Rove people out there, to come on the air?
Yeah, this piece was actually in on salon.com /opinion/feature. You may have to play back an archive to get this. /feature/2004/09/1/conservatives/index_np.html. And Doug's website is www.cato.org/people/bando, bandow.html. So I'm not sure that this was actually published by the Cato Institute. This guy, however, has a website on, you know, he's part of the Cato Institute website, so he must be a regular writer for them or whatever. But apparently this came from salon.com. It was forwarded along to me.
Wow. Can you put that on your site?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And number two, before I get off, can you play Taking Care of Business again, please?
Taking Care of Business.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the actual real live good old-fashioned music Taking Care of Business?
No. The parody.
Oh, the parody. You know, I'm not sure where it is, but I'll mention it to Louise. We'll see if we can get it in the rotation for the bumper.
Keep ranting now.
Okay. Good to hear from you, Tony. Here's this. Just, you know, what might the conservatives what might happen to some of these poor folks if their tax cuts went away?
No, not the yachts.
Darling, wake up! You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions and we were middle class.
Oh my!
We were both working and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream.
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Another great parody ad. Well, we don't take away their tax cuts after all. You know, it's let our children pay for the next yacht for the next billionaire. Isn't that the American way? No, actually, I think it's not. And I agree with Doug Bandow. A vote for Bush is a vote for a train wreck for the United States. So, in my words, not his. Thanks for listening to this hour. Tom Hartman here with you on the True People's Radio.
You have been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Hotel workers in three of the country's largest cities are prepared to go on strike. Housekeepers, bellmen, and other workers in Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco are planning the strike in an attempt to pressure employers into signing contracts that would enhance the voice of unions in nine major hotels. In addition to typical strike demands over wages and benefits, the demand of some of those workers is a contract that would expire at the same time as those for hotel workers in other cities, essentially giving the hotel unions more negotiation leverage across the country.
Several large bankruptcies have swung a $19 billion surplus into an $11.2 billion deficit for the U.S. government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, and a new report by the Center of Federal Financial Institutions estimates the PBGC will be broke by 2020. In principle, corporations are required to contribute enough money to the PBGC to cover all future pension payments. Douglas Elliott is president and author of the Coffee Report.
Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation was set up like the FDIC to guarantee bank deposits. The PBGC guarantees that if you are promised a pension, that company goes bankrupt, and there's not enough money in the pension fund, you'll still get the pension.
But employers are getting around their obligations by abusing flexibility on the timing of their contributions.
It was kind of masked in the 90s when everybody was seeming to do much better than they really were, and stock prices were high, which helped pension funds that invested in stocks, and it also made it less likely that companies would go bankrupt.
Elliott says that to date, American corporations have promised their employees more than $1.5 trillion worth of pension payments.
After shutting down five factories throughout Michigan and Ohio for 5 weeks, Michigan sugar workers were back on the job Monday. The workers at a Ohio factory staged the walkout out of displeasure of having a contract imposed on them by the company. The workers set up picket lines at all of the company's factories, including four in Michigan. And when workers at the other factories refused to cross, Michigan Sugar was forced to go to the National Labor Relations Board, claiming that it was illegal for the Ohio workers to strike at Michigan factories. Then LRB disagreed, and the company finally sat down with negotiators late last week. After reaching a compromise, work at the factories returned to normal on Monday.
Here's today's DalBob Report. The federal budget is graying, according to a new report by the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Researchers found social welfare spending for elders was nearly four times greater than that for children in the year 2000, an increase of 20%. Higher medical expenses for the elderly were cited as one of the main reasons for the discrepancy, despite higher rates of poverty for children. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Colin Powell did it with AOL Time Warner. John Ashcroft did it with Microsoft and Monsanto. Interior Secretary Gail Norton did it with BP Amoco. Condoleezza Rice did it with Chevron. Ooh, Donald Rumsfeld did it with Big Boy Sears, Kellogg, and Allstate.
Of course the Bush administration is in bed with its corporate donors.
George Bush did it with Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and Enron.
Did you think they were giving it away?
Paid for by BillionairesForBush.com.
If you think that the Bushites had no post-war plan for what they would do in Iraq after our military ousted Saddam, think again. You can see their plan in the extremist economic policies that were quietly and autocratically imposed on the Iraqi people during the reign of L. Paul Bremer III, who was our occupying czar there. While America's media establishment has been focused on the raging war by Iraqi insurgents and by the Bushites' attempt to enthrone a puppet government there, the neocon laissez-faire zealots in the administration have been gleefully using this ravaged country as their own ideological playground. For years, these Ayn Randian theorists have longed to create their utopia of a corporate state, and they've used the IMF, World Bank, WTO, and other monkey wrenches to try to implement their theories in Latin America and elsewhere. But they've never had an entire economy at their disposal until they grabbed Iraq. While Baghdad was burning, Bremer arrived. Rather than putting out the fires, he used them as a distraction to issue decrees that instantly opened up Iraq to a total corporate takeover. For example, his decrees open up all of that nation's public assets to foreign corporate ownership, and they allow 100% of the country's industries, from banking to food, to be owned by foreigners. Also, Bremer ruled that 100% of the profits that foreign investors make in Iraq can now be hauled out of the country. There's no requirement that any of these profits be reinvested there, nor that the investors have to pay even a dime in taxes on the profits they haul away. This isn't liberation, as the Bushites call their Iraqi adventure. It's legalized looting and is fueling the continuing anger and armed resistance by the Iraqi people, who are determined not to have their nation looted. This is Jim Hightower saying, to get this full story, see Naomi Klein's explosive article in Harper's Magazine. You can read it at harpers.org.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Hello from the road, folks. You know, the only thing better than a twofer is a threefer. That's why this fall I'm staying at Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels. See, I get triple Southwest Airlines Rapid Rewards credit every time, so I earn flights three times faster. Call 800-4-CHOICE or visit choicehotels.com. We'll see you there.
Offer good for qualifying stays in the U.S. before November 30th, 2004. For details, visit choicehotels.com. Triple credit means 1.5 credits instead of the standard 0.5.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Welcome to the third hour of the Tom Hartman radio program. Broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border, and streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. The Vice President, David Schuster, MSNBC's David Schuster reports, the Vice President has given us another incredible quote. I'm surprised this one hasn't gotten more coverage. But this, we wonder why there is so much concern among Russians, among diplomats all around the world, about the way that this administration is handling foreign policy. And here we go. Talking about European nations and the war on terror, Cheney said, and I quote, and I'm quoting David Schuster here, quote, this now Dick Cheney's words, I think some have hoped that if they kept their heads down and stayed out of the line of fire, they wouldn't get hit. I think what happened in Russia now demonstrates pretty conclusively that everybody is a target, that Russia, of course, didn't support us in Iraq. They didn't get involved in sending troops there, and they've gotten hit anyway. Now, you get this? I mean, this is nuts. Dick Cheney saying that the reason that Russia got hit by Chechen separatists, freedom fighters, rebels, terrorists, bad guys, whatever they are, the reason that this horrible thing happened in Russia was because the Russian government did not choose to send soldiers into Iraq along with the United States. That they didn't want to add their soldiers to the, you know, 38 people from Lithuania or whatever it was. You know, this is crazy. Why isn't this getting more coverage? You can bet that the Russians are paying attention to this. Oh, Vlad the Impaler, good old Vladimir Putin, he's got to be looking at this going, are these guys nuts or what? Are they living on another planet? Is Dick Cheney really trying to claim that because Russia didn't go along with our voluntary war of choice against Iraq, that the rest of the world sat back and, by and large, with the exception of a bunch of very small, with the exception of England and Australia, you know, who basically doesn't have anybody there anymore, maybe 100 people. And everybody thinks England made a huge commitment. There's only 6,000 or 7,000 British troops in Iraq right now. That's it. And you know, but other than that, the coalition of the billing, right? All the countries that wanted foreign aid from us and help in this way or that. And because Russia didn't go along with it, Cheney is saying, they got hit by terrorists. You know, first it's, if you don't vote for me, Cheney says, you'll get hit by terrorists. And now he's saying, if you don't go to war with me, you're going to get hit by terrorists. See, I told you so. I mean, isn't the time coming here pretty soon when we've got to ask ourselves about the rationality and sanity of these guys? There is seriously something wrong with this. Seriously something wrong with this. At the same time, by the way, we have a situation in Chechnya, or in Russia, excuse me, as a result of the situation in Chechnya, that I think Americans need to take very seriously. And that isn't getting discussed in the mainstream press because it doesn't boil down to instant sound bites super easily. And frankly, you know, most Americans have never been to Russia, don't have any sense of it. You know, doesn't affect me. They forget what it was like 30 years ago, 40 years ago. I haven't forgotten. I remember being 7 years old in school, and, you know, in the 1950s, and the bell goes off. And you got to jump under your desk. And the special way that they taught us in school, to put your thumbs over the flap of your ear to close your ears, and to put your hands over your eyes so that with two hands you can cover four organs, two ears and two eyes. So that when the nuclear blast goes off, you won't be deafened by the roar and you won't be blinded by the light. They didn't bother to tell us that if it's close enough to deafen you or to blind you, it's also going to cook you. Maybe they didn't want to scare us. Maybe they wanted to give us a sense that we could do something about it. A little bit of empowerment. Or maybe they did want us. Maybe they wanted to. Maybe this was the Cold Warrior's way. Let's see, Eisenhower would have been president then. Maybe this was simply, you know, their way of saying there's a real threat. That was the 1956 equivalent of today. Tom Ridge trotting out in front of the cameras and going, "Well, we're going to raise the terror alert here from yellow to orange, and you better be very afraid." And Bush's leadership, you know, that's not how Tom Ridge talks, I know, but I can't do Tom Ridge. And you wouldn't recognize it. And Bush's leadership of the war on terror is this wonderfulness. Come on. But here's what's happening in Russia. In Russia, there's 89 regional governors, roughly the equivalent of states in the United States. And up until today, the way that the governors got picked was by the people in the regions voting for them. No more. Putin says he's joining the war on terrorism. And, of course, the war on terrorism starts at home. Just ask anybody who's tried to get into a Bush or Cheney campaign event with anything other than a Go Bush Go t-shirt on. Ask anybody whose phone is being tapped under the, well, they wouldn't know. You wouldn't know under the Patriot Act. Or who's been subject to sneak and peek, you know, where they break into your home without letting you know and without a warrant. Or whose internet is mail is being monitored. Well, on and on it goes. So what Vlad has said is that the 89 regional governors are now going to be appointed, not elected. The appointments will be subject to a referendum of sorts by the legislatures of the regions. In other words, it's like, but they're going to be appointed by him. So it'd be sort of like George Bush saying, okay, from now on, the governor of your state is appointed by me. Your state legislature can decide whether to say yes or no to this guy. They can't put anybody else in. They can't put forward their candidate. If you say no, you get another guy from me. And, of course, if you say no, there will be some political consequences to that. In fact, Vladimir Ryzhkov, who's one of the few, as the Wall Street Journal yesterday noted on the front page, one of the few opposition legislators left in parliament after Kremlin-backed parties swept last year's elections, says just this. This would be like Bush saying after September 11 that from now on, governors will be elected by state assemblies rather than by the people. What has this got to do with fighting terrorism? Putin is exploiting these terror attacks to strangle democracy and strengthen his personal power, end quote. This is a guy whose political career is not going to last very long, I suspect. What you're seeing is the destruction of democracy in Russia. And I'm telling you, the destruction of democracy in Russia began when Russia fell during a Republican administration in the United States. And as a result of that, we went in there to help them democratize the country. Remember when Yeltsin was there? We went in and we said, we're going to show you how to do it. Give corporations human rights. Give corporations rights. Sell off all the state industry. It's shock therapy. This is the neocon shock therapy. We're going to instantly, radically, so-called democratize your country. And what happened was hundreds of thousands of people got thrown out of work. An economic disaster took place. A small number of very, very, you know, well-connected people got extremely rich. They became billionaires. And what had been sort of a lower middle class, but there was this kind of semblance of a middle class in Russia. And I'm speaking from experience here. I haven't lived in Russia, but I've spent a fair amount of time there, and I've been there a number of times over the last 15, 20 years. Got wiped out. Now, there was, you know, there were some benefits to this. There has been a rise in economic activity. There, you know, there's some good things have come out of this. But it didn't have to be so violent. They could have done it the way that, frankly, it was done in the United States up until Ronald Reagan became president. And that is that you have laws that allow for labor unions. So you have a natural balance in the dynamic tension between the needs and desires of labor and the needs and desires of capital, of management, of ownership. That helps create a middle class. You would have control over corporate activity in a way that would diminish corruption. You pass laws that make it illegal for trusts, for monopolies to form because they're anti-competitive. But the Russians didn't do any of that because the cons who were advising them were saying, oh, you don't want to do that stuff. Just throw the doors open. All right, let's test Ayn Rand's theories. That was the beginning of the end of democracy in Russia. Believe me. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, tomhartman.com, our website, if you'd like to drop into the chat room and join one of the finest, wisest, most intelligent and sometimes strangest conversation groups on the Internet. I say that affectionately, you guys. TomHartmann.com. Just click the live chat button. It'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. And Mike in West Virginia is on the line. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Well, you got that stuff wrong.
Mike, you're breaking up. Try it again.
I said, you got that stuff wrong with Putin over there. It can't be.
You're vanishing.
Okay, hold on a second.
Okay.
How about now?
Try it.
Okay. I said, you got to be wrong about what you were saying about Putin over there. That can't be right.
What do you mean?
Well, George Dudley's already looked into his eyes and seen he had a good heart.
Oh. Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, they're both autocrats. George W. Bush and Vladimir Putin, in their souls, both believe that power should flow from the top down, not from the bottom up.
That's right. And, you know, the other part that I haven't heard you mention yet anyway is that Putin says now that they're going to attack terrorism anywhere in the world. So I guess he's adopted George W.'s policy there.
That's right. In fact, that's the last paragraph of this article on Wall Street Journal. Their immediate concern seems focused on Russian declarations about preemptive action, and especially that Moscow might use President Bush's own doctrine to justify reasserting Russian military control over neighboring regions with large ethnic Russian populations. Bingo. You got it, Mike.
Two more things real quick.
Okay, Mike, if you got two more things, I'm going to have to put you on hold because we got a break coming up here, and I have no control over the time on the breaks. 20 minutes past the hour. Hang on. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartmann here with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartmann's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartmann. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. More bad news from the Congressional Budget Office at the start of the Republican National Convention. According to the CBO, Bush's three major tax cuts, the last two passed even after it became clear the economy was facing a deficit, did not create the 7 million new jobs promised. They also increased the national debt and shifted more of the tax burden from the country's rich to middle-class families.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Out of His Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Why does the sun go on shining? Why does the sea rush to shore?
Hey, welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Is this song going somewhere I'm not expecting? It's the old song. Yeah, that's what I thought. For a minute there, sometimes these spoof songs are so good. And anyway, welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. And what's going on with Russia? This is now, I'm not going to make this like the topic for the hour. I think it's so important that we understand this, that Americans understand this. The White House has the other point that is made in this Wall Street Journal article. The White House has done little to speed up efforts or increase funding to secure Russian nuclear materials, an issue the Democratic challenger John Kerry has raised repeatedly in his campaign. Hoover Institution's Mr. McFaul says, Russia is one of the very few places where you have real live terrorists and real live weapons of mass destruction, and this has not been a top priority even after September 11th. This, top priority this administration. What is going on? William in Orange County, California, on the line, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Hey, William, what's up?
Have a comment on why Russia is the way it is and some of the things that they're doing. Defies explanation if you take the explanations that people have been offering that Russia is just undergoing some form of change. They're trying to do things differently now. The reality is very simple. Number one, since Russia supposedly fell apart in 1990, they have never released one political prisoner that they had. In other words, the central core of what was Russia, the same Russia that we were afraid of and hated and had to defend ourselves against, etc.
And whose KGB was headed up by Vladimir Putin, by the way.
Well, regardless of who, the important thing is that it's never changed.
Yeah.
The only real benefit they got out of creating 15 separate nation states is that in the United Nations, then they get more votes, kind of like if the United States suddenly declared all 50 of its states to be individual countries and have individual representation.
Well, yes, except that a lot of those states have not always voted with Russia. Some of them are involved with us in Iraq. You know, some of them are going their own way. The president of Shevardnadze of Georgia was in a big tiff with Putin. I don't think it's quite that simple, frankly.
Well, it is. I think it is because you just mentioned it here that now they're just turning around and saying, "Okay, now all the governors, we're going to take back control of them."
Yeah, but that's within Russia. That's not within the former Soviet republics.
Well,
it's a difference.
Well, there is a difference at the moment, but all they have to do then slowly is just take back whatever it is that they gave them.
See, here's the caveat that I see that they're using Bush's policy. Bush has said, okay, the new policy is you can go anywhere in the world and you can attack anybody if they're terrorists. And so the Russians are saying, okay, we are also reserving the right to go anywhere and attack terrorists. And you're going to start seeing now former Soviet republics being like Chechnya being identified as terrorist states and Russia taking them back that way.
Well, of course that could happen anywhere. That aspect of just you can't have a war on terrorism. You have to have a war on terrorists, and we have to identify the people. We can't just go marching around all over the place doing whatever we want.
Yeah, and not just the people, not just the people, but also the causes that they that they're representing. I mean, why are they using the weapon of terrorism against us or against our allies? That's the question that needs to be asked.
I agree with that, but we also need to remember that I don't think a leopard has ever changed its spots in Russia.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you. In fact, you could build a very strong case I was there when the change happened. I was there when the big election happened that Yeltsin got elected in, and my sense of it was that there was a real moment when Russia really could have gone through a transformation, and that it got co-opted by the rise of the oligarchs and a spin into essentially fascism, and. I just don't think it's a good thing now. I think it's a very dangerous thing. But they didn't have a democratic history, so it's a tough one for them. William, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Hotel workers in three of the country's largest cities are prepared to go on strike. Housekeepers, bellmen, and other workers in Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco are planning the strike in an attempt to pressure employers into signing contracts that would enhance the voice of unions in nine major hotels. In addition to typical strike demands over wages and benefits, the demand of some of those workers is a contract that would expire at the same time as those for hotel workers in other cities, essentially giving the hotel unions more negotiation leverage across the country.
Several large bankruptcies have swung a $19 billion surplus into an $11.2 billion deficit for the U.S. government's Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, and a new report by the Center of Federal Financial Institutions estimates the PBGC will be broke by 2020. In principle, corporations are required to contribute enough money to the PBGC to cover all future pension payments. Douglas Elliott is president and author of the Coffee Report.
Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation was set up like the FDIC to guarantee bank deposits. The PBGC guarantees that if you are promised a pension, that company goes bankrupt, and there's not enough money in the pension fund, you'll still get the pension.
But employers are getting around their obligations by abusing flexibility on the timing of their contributions.
It was kind of masked in the 90s when everybody was seeming to do much better than they really were, and stock prices were high, which helped pension funds that invested in stocks, and it also made it less likely that companies would go bankrupt.
Elliott says that to date, American corporations have promised their employees more than $1.5 trillion worth of pension payments.
After shutting down five factories throughout Michigan and Ohio for 5 weeks, Michigan sugar workers were back on the job Monday. The workers at a Ohio factory staged the walkout out of displeasure of having a contract imposed on them by the company. The workers set up picket lines at all of the company's factories, including four in Michigan. And when workers at the other factories refused to cross, Michigan Sugar was forced to go to the National Labor Relations Board, claiming that it was illegal for the Ohio workers to strike at Michigan factories. Then LRB disagreed, and the company finally sat down with negotiators late last week. After reaching a compromise, work at the factories returned to normal on Monday.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The federal budget is graying, according to a new report by the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Researchers found social welfare spending for elders was nearly four times greater than that for children in the year 2000, an increase of 20%. Higher medical expenses for the elderly were cited as one of the main reasons for the discrepancy, despite higher rates of poverty for children. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
bringing democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Staring in the face of the moon, hoping my heart has a little more room for missing you. Staring in the face of the moon.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. The South American nations, the defense ministers of seven South American nations this morning, or yesterday, in Buenos Aires, Argentina, collectively told us to get lost. Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay, Bolivia, Paraguay, and Uruguay. Why are they in there twice? It's got to be a typo. Anyhow, seven countries, and I have the names of six of them in this news story from the Associated Press. In our countries, Chilean Defense Minister Michelle Bachelet says, in our countries, the armed forces are not the first front in the fight against terrorism. Bachelet echoed the views of her counterparts in Argentina and Uruguay, countries where military rulers in the 70s and 80s waged crackdowns against leftists and dissidents that left tens of thousands dead. See, they've been down this road. They've been down this road of, there's terrorists out there, there's terrorists here within our country, we've got to deal with them, we've got to crack down, we've got to suspend civil liberties, we've got to pass the Patriot Act, we've got to get on these... They've been down that road. They've seen where it leads, and they're saying to us now, thank you very much, but no thanks. Argentine authorities report some 13,000 people died during the 1976 through 83 dictatorship during a crackdown on leftists and other junta opponents, but human rights groups say the toll could actually be higher than 30,000. And now you got the Bush administration saying, let's do away with posse comitatus, the law that says that the army can't inflict itself upon American civilians. And you got Porter Goss, who is about to be anointed as head of the CIA some months ago, saying that the CIA should have police powers within the United States, just like the KGB does in Russia. The power to arrest, the power to detain, the power to interrogate, the power to imprison. The CIA. You would think we would have learned. You would think that we'd look back on our own history and would have learned. Or that we could just look at other nations, but apparently not. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, Chris in New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind?
Oh, not much, Tom. Where was Deferment Dick when he said this latest idiocy?
I don't know. I've got it from the MSNBC reporter, and it's off his blog. He didn't give the details, but he says, "Yep, Cheney sure enough said that." And
didn't occur to anybody to point out that Spain got hit because it had people in Iraq?
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I had. Surprise, surprise. Well, you know, Dick Cheney, consistency and rationality and logic have never been strong points for Dick Cheney.
Yeah, on the Kitty Kelly thing, it's interesting enough. I'm probably going to read the book when it comes out, but she has been on NBC Today Show with Matt Lauer every morning this week with interviews.
Really?
And in each instance, every morning, she has said, thank you so much, NBC, for not bowing to pressure from the White House to keep me off the air, because they've been pushing hard.
That's interesting, but she has not been on ABC or CBS, do you know?
No, but all three, I don't know about ABC or CBS. I do know every morning, I usually have it on NBC when I get up. Every morning this week, she's been on answering questions, talking, and pretty much holding her own.
I tell you, I got the memo that went out to all the talk show hosts in the United States, saying, with regard to the Kitty Kelly story, please go to black. In other words, don't even mention it. And you know, I'm on the air. I can't listen to Limbaugh and O'Reilly because they're on the same time I am. But I'll bet you they're not discussing Kitty Kelly. I'll bet you they're talking about, are these documents forged, in a way to, you know, in an effort to try and divert attention from the actual story that 60 Minutes was reporting on about George W. getting into the Air National Guard, Texas Air National Guard, because of favoritism, because of, you know, strings being pulled by his daddy, the congressman.
And that's actually illegal.
Is it?
No. What was done for George W. Bush to jump him ahead of all those other people was actually an illegality.
Are you sure?
I would assume so. I mean,
I don't think so. I think the system just, you know, we have a system. We've always had a system. Let's just be honest about this. We have always had a system, and I don't think that any country has never had a system in which riches and power don't have their own reward.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
you have a good day, man.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Good to hear from you. Thanks for the call. And you know, to the extent, and that's the whole idea of American democracy, is that to the extent that we can identify those areas where riches and power produce anti-democratic results, we try to correct it. That historically has been the moral high ground that American democracy has held. We have never been perfect. We have never, you know, we have never been a truly egalitarian society, but we have always held that ideal. And I think that many in America still hold that ideal. I think this is one of the reasons why you've got conservative writers now saying, don't vote for George Bush. He has betrayed conservative principles. And of course, on the left, you've got people saying, no, we're not going to go down that road. And the whole idea of power for power's sake, I mean, this is such a problem. We cried wolf, right? We said, you know, weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Look out, they're going to get... Yeah, this little vial here of botulism toxin, these spores are enough to kill a zillion people if they were properly distributed by one of those unmanned aerial vehicles that they've got over there in Iraq, you know, and we could, in that would be the end of the whole world. The whole game would be over. Remember Colin Powell before the United Nations? You know, going on and on about this stuff. Remember George W. Bush going on and on, and in his various speeches about the dangers that we were facing, that you know, the mushroom cloud, it's just right there. I mean, just right there.
The evidence indicates that Iraq is reconstituting its nuclear weapons program. Saddam Hussein has held numerous meetings with Iraqi nuclear scientists, a group he calls his nuclear mujahideen, his nuclear holy warriors, facing clear evidence of peril. We cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun, that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
Yeah, be afraid. Okay, so we cried wolf, and the world at the time was saying, you know, I don't think so. I mean, I know it's very fashionable for cons on news shows and on talk radio to say, well, Saddam Hussein had fooled France, he had fooled Russia, they all thought he had weapons of mass destruction. Excuse me, if they thought he had weapons of mass destruction and he represented a threat, they would have voted for invading him. They aren't idiots. In fact, the resolution that they all voted on, Resolution 1440, said explicitly, if our inspectors can find proof that there are weapons there and that this guy intends to use them or has the ability to use them, then we will take him out. All of us. All the nations of the world unanimously voted at the Security Council on this. Now, it wasn't all the nations. The Security Council unanimously voted on this thing. And the weapons inspectors were in there, and they were looking around. In fact, they were negotiating a deal where we were actually going to bring a team of people from the CIA into Iraq to point out to the weapons inspectors where they were certain that these weapons were. And Alberadi, the head of the nuclear, you know, the IAEA, and Hans Blix, the looking for chemical and biological weapons, and they're saying, okay, if you know that there are weapons here, tell me where, and I will go look. And Saddam is saying, the doors are open, man. Where, no, he doesn't talk Jamaican. You know, wherever you want to go, you know, you can go. Then Blix comes back and he reports before the United Nations and he says, you know, well, you know, early on we were getting a little bit of blowback, a little bit of resistance, but now we're getting none. We see no evidence that they're tapping our phones. We see no evidence that they're, you know, we're showing up and surprising people. And it's clearly not staged. And we can't find any evidence of weapons of mass destruction. It looks like they were all destroyed in 1991. And guess what? They were. Well, between 91 and 98. Bill Clinton took the last few out when he pulled out the last set of weapons inspectors and went in and bombed the country. So anyhow, we cried wolf. And now we're going back to the UN again, and we're saying, and there's another wolf! Thus, this article by George John in the Associated Press today, headlined, Americans, Europeans appear to diverge on what to do about Iran. Now, there are some, of course, who think that George's dyslexia got the better of him. That Powell and Rumsfeld and all these guys brought him all these memos about the nuclear danger and the terrorists and everything, and they were all spelled I-R-A-N, but somehow he mixed up in his mind N and Q, and he just misspelled. And we invaded the wrong country. I don't go along with it, but, you know, it's a theory. But in any case, here we now the U.S.-European rift surfaced Tuesday on how harshly to deal with Iran and its suspect nuclear program. Now, first of all, the Iranians are saying, we don't have a nuclear program. We're enriching uranium to work, you know, to work out the bugs of fast breeder reactors and stuff like that. You know, they claim that they're doing this as part of an energy program. Now, I am not naive enough to think that that's all that they're up to. Frankly, here's the simple reality that they're looking at. George W. Bush, who has demonstrated that he's crazy enough to invade a country that represents no threat to him, to sacrifice 20, 30,000 innocent lives in that country, to have 7,000, between 7 and 20,000 of his own soldiers wounded, and to kill 1,000 of his own countrymen in the process. He's crazy enough to do that for a country that has no nuclear weapons. But on the other hand, when North Korea says, Mr. Bush, we just developed a nuclear bomb. Suddenly George's enthusiasm for invasion goes away. I mean, you know, Iran has figured out this is the behavior of a schoolyard bully. I mean, here Iraq had been beaten in a war in 91, had been subject to 8 or 9 years of sanctions, continuous bombing. I mean, in the year before we attacked Iraq, we bombed them several hundred times. Every time they'd flinch, we'd bomb them. We had blown every single airplane in their entire air force into smithereens. There was nothing. They had tanks that were 15, 20 years. I mean, it was a joke, the Iraqi army. And everybody knew it. Everybody in the world knew it. So what's the message that the Iranians get? The message that they get is, better build nukes quick, or Bush will be coming for you next. And you know, so I think it's entirely reasonable to assume that they're building nukes. After all, George has told them, if you build nukes, we will not attack you, but if you don't have nukes, we will. So now the Americans are going to the UN and they're saying, you know, we need another one of these resolutions to attack another country. The American suggestions, which were made available to the Associated Press, demand Iran grant agency inspectors, the agency being the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA. Iran grant agency inspectors, quote, complete, immediate, and unrestricted access, provide full information about, you know, end quote, about past illegal nuclear activities, suspend, quote, immediately and fully, end quote, uranium enrichment and related activities, and meet all agency demands, quote, to resolve all outstanding issues, end quote, nurturing suspicions of a possible weapons program. Washington, the AP notes, wants to take Iran before the UN Security Council for alleged violations of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. And they want to put in an October 31 deadline, 2 days before the election in the United States. Now, why might we want to do this? Could it be that the deadline of it was just a week or so, a few weeks before the midterm elections in 2002 that proved so useful to the Republicans in attacking any Democrats who said, no, wait a minute, let's not rush to war. What? You want us to be vaporized? You want those guys with all that botulism to Anthrax it was, to come over here. October 31. Can you imagine anything more transparently political? Mohammed El-Baradei, the director of the IAEA, says basically, give me a break. Well, here's his exact quote. He says, we cannot just say there's a magic date, end quote, for an end to the agency's Iran probe. He also repeated that his investigation has not definitively established whether Iran is trying to make nuclear weapons. Here's what he told reporters. He said, we haven't seen any concrete proof that there's a weapons program. He goes on to say, can we say everything's peaceful? Obviously, we're not at that stage. So let's send some people in there. Let's look around. But the Bush administration wants an October 31 deadline and a resolution that says we can whack these guys. Well, the countries of Europe said thanks, but no thanks. As the Associated Press notes, revelations of the rift were expected to prove embarrassing to the Americans. And they go on to note, Europe and the United States might not be able to bridge their differences, a development that would be unprecedented. Unprecedented. Good word for, you know, what this administration has been doing, what they're up to, and how they're doing it. Absolutely incredible. George trying to force another confrontation with another Middle Eastern country just before another national American election. What a surprise. 10 minutes before the hour.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When human rights groups discover that our third world sweatshops employ a lot of child labor, they're always horrified. These children should be in school, they stridently insist. But why would these kids be better off sitting at a desk learning about social studies than working on our assembly lines? Schools are supposed to prepare you for the future. In most of the places we do business, the only future these moppets have is on an assembly line. What better way for them to prepare than in our sweatshop apprentice program? The kids get paid a special introductory wage while they learn all the skills they'll need for the rest of their short, miserable lives. And those little hands can do some really intricate stitching, believe me. This has been Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. It's been said that if you scratch the surface of any issue of social or economic injustice, you'll find the issue of corporate power and corporate personhood. Join me for the facts on September 24th. I'll be speaking in Portland, Oregon at the Unitarian Church on Main Street at 7 p.m. For more information, call Marcia at 503-665-3957. That's 503-665-3957.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Tiny pieces of plastic cover much of the oceans, and they fill the stomachs of some animals that live there. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A lot of plastic trash ends up floating in the oceans, and it slowly breaks down into tiny fragments that some animals eat by mistake. The results can range from indigestion to poisoning. Charles Moore studies the effects of plastic in the oceans and where it's concentrated. Moore founded the Alcalita Marine Research Foundation in California to do this kind of research. In some places at sea, Moore says there is more plastic than there is natural food. Moore says this is a huge problem for marine animals. Plastic comes in virtually any shape and color, and a lot of it looks like natural food to hungry animals.
Just about any food you can imagine has a plastic mimic. So all kinds of marine animals are eating plastic.
Moore says animals that eat the plastic sometimes end up with digestion problems. In addition, they can become weak since they filled their stomachs with junk that gives them no energy. He says the worst problem is that the plastic can lead to poisoning.
Plastic is a sponge for oily pollutants, DDTs, PCBs. These bits of plastic are catching these pollutants and moving them into animals. So it's sort of like where a fish wouldn't necessarily have eaten a pollutant, if you put it on a piece of plastic that looks like food and then the fish will eat it, you're creating a vector for transmitting pollutants in the ocean.
Moore says toxins from the tiniest scraps of plastic can slowly move up the food chain. That's because pollutants that stick to the plastic accumulate in the tissues of animals, and those body burdens are passed on as smaller animals are eaten by larger ones. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air.
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq.
Right.
I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
Oh, yeah. Forgot that. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. The prophecy is fulfilled. Yes, indeed. The prophecy is fulfilled. George W. Bush and his good buddy, Prince Bandar bin Sultan Bush. No, seriously, they call him Prince Bush, or Bandar Bush. He's the ambassador to the United States from Saudi Arabia, and a member of the, of course, the Saudi royal family, a longtime close Bush family friend. Bob Woodward in Plan of Attack. This is back in April. New York Daily News reported this. Saudi Arabia may be hatching an October surprise to benefit President Bush by lowering crude oil prices before the November election, Washington Post reporter Bob Woodward said in an interview earlier yesterday. And then they're quoting, Saudi Prince Bandar bin Sultan, a longtime ambassador to the U.S. and a close Bush family friend, told the president that oil production will get a boost to strengthen the U.S. economy, said Woodward, author of a new book on White House war planning for Iraq. Prices could go down very quickly, Woodward told CBS's 60 Minutes. That's the Saudi pledge. Okay, that was in April. May, June, July, August, September. Here we are now. Today's news, literally today's news. By the end of September, the Saudis will pump an extra 800,000 barrels a day, nearly a million barrels a day coming online from Saudi Arabia. Guess what, folks? It's going to drive down the price. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, source of more than a third of the world's oil, this is from Bloomberg News, plans to boost quotas by 3.8% in a bid to lower near-record prices, said oil officials from Kuwait and Qatar, allies of the United States and friends of the Bush family. The target will increase by 1 million barrels to 27 million barrels a day, blah-de-blah-de-blah-de-blah. Saudi Arabia's El Nami said yesterday the kingdom will add 800,000 new barrels of capacity by the end of the month from two new fields to help ease concern of shortages on world markets. What a marvelous, as they say, October surprise, or as Americans coming together know, it's what a marvelous, boy, how times change, right? 9 months ago, Spencer Abraham, who we interviewed on the show a couple weeks ago, was saying, come on, we're not going to work with OPEC to boost production. He says, in fact, he said, it's very clear, we're not going to beg OPEC for oil. No, we didn't have to. They already cut a deal with George to help him get elected. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Ira for engineering it, to Brad for our music, to Shelby for streaming us around the world on radiopower.org, to our sponsors, particularly Organic Wine Company and Small Dog Electronics. Thanks to Mike Toth for our archives and TomHartman.com and to Ben Birch for the Archives of White Rose Society. Thanks to Jay for our music, the folks in our chat room, and to you for showing up and listening. See you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's